everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told. Paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold.
This is my world.
Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. So you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the show. I'm running late. I am Brian Hammer Jackson. And, well, this is, we're starting at a regular time at 7 a.m. Who knows, maybe some regulars will come in today. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to the show. I used to be number one. I think I'm number three. I'm doing number two. But I soon should be number one again. Not like I'm used to being on the radio. Feels like I'm not. I see this big thing, says I'm on the air. Yes, I'm talking to you folks. There's a lot of things to talk about, man. And we could rehash the old stuff of Donald Trump coming back. The man even admitted it. The only reason he's coming back to evade any criminal indictment. So he'd come back, become president. That's his thinking. He said it out loud. He said it to the people. He coming back to evade any criminal indictment and get rid of the people who may indict him or his family. Only in America, folks, only in America that a criminal can run for office and say, okay, and the people stupid enough to vote for him, really, say, okay, and now I'm president, I'm going to get rid of everybody in charge of indicting me and anybody else around me. Today is going to be the committee. They're doing prime time today. Everybody's so excited about what did Donald Trump do during a coup. Well, we know what he did during a coup. He wasn't coup at all. Now, I'll tell you who's a coup president is Obama. Now, Obama's coup. Well, that's coup. Yeah, Obama. You know, I think of Obama, man. I don't know why he's not the best president in the world, but when he came to the microphone, you know, shit's about to be real and things are going to be good. When you see Trump, it's just like you know there's some shit going on. There's some shit going on. Well, before we get to our main story, and we're going to get our main story, there's two things that are happening. One was Chappelle. I'm going to talk about that. Two, just to keep up on the main story, I can't stand Bannon. I really can't stand that dude. So we're going to hear a little bit about that, and then we'll get to our main story. But here's our main story. Escape from a house of horror, the Turbin family. Now, I think 2020 did a story on this, and I don't know when they did a story on it. I didn't see it. I think, it was posted on July 18th. Today is what? Oh, the 21st. Damn. And the reason it caught my eye is that I used to interview a lot of people. And there was an author, I swear to God, it was like one out of every five authors has been molested or has a story about child molestation or child abuse. And they'll talk. They'll talk about it. I am convinced, I mean, got to a point, because I did the show over 10 years, got to a point where I'm thinking, wow, this happens a lot, you know? Now, I don't even know. See, now we get into a gray area because you little GZers or Xers, whatever you are. You millennials, you little pussies. Child abuse to you is like you want a toy, you didn't get one. And then you act a fool, and then you got hit in the bottom, and then you call yourself, you were molested as a child, so I don't know what counts for you guys because you're such pussies. But no kidding. One out of six, even more than that, had some kind of contact when they were young about some kind of child abuse. Well, this was just normally and then just recently in a newspaper about these kids, the Turban kids. Not only did they get molested, we're going to go part one. How long is part one? We'll go part one on this. Even they went to a foster home and they got molested. There's a story where they went to this foster home. I'm not giving it away. I'm still going to see it. They went to this foster home and these foster parents molested them too. Well, there's one story where they would feed them rotten food and everything, and when a kid threw up, they would feed them, and then the foster parents would make them eat their throw up. These kids were horrible, horrible situation. And that's going right now. There's a lawsuit currently. That's one of the news. And here's one of the another news that I have. This is 3 years ago, 11-year-old. Wait a minute. Hold on.
I've been getting paid $1,000.
I've been out of the loop. 11-year-old arrested for his pregnant, soon-to-be stepmother's murder. His pregnant, soon-to-be stepmother's murder. He's 11 years old. What happened? What happened to these kids? What's been going on since I've been... maybe we'll start with that story, because that's unbelievable. Let's hit this headline. This happened the 18th? 2018? I didn't hear this. The youth of today... See, this is what happens when they raise you wrong. This is what happens when you spare the rod, you spoil the child, and they commit murder. That's what happened to your kids. And so the lesson for today is you got to beat your kids. They're out of control. If you don't beat your kids, they're going to grow up to be out of control. You got to beat them. Throw a shoe at them. You got to beat your kids. They need discipline, I tell you. They run around with no discipline, and then next thing you know, they're running around and with a hatchet and an axe, and they're driving for Uber, and next thing you know, that's it. Ride's over. Discipline, I tell you. Here's a story. This is an 11-year-old arrested for his pregnant, soon-to-be stepmother's murder. Again, in 2020. Wow, this was like October 19th. Check this story out.
Tonight, ABC's Juju Chang right here with a dramatic game changer in a case she's been covering for 9 years now.
If you haven't guessed, we're doing murder. I don't know why. Look at this guy.
He's still a typical fifth grader, quarterback of the Pee Wee football team, the Warriors, coached by his father, Chris, a single dad.
Jordan had always been the center of his father's universe. They were best friends. They did everything together.
Their hometown, Wampum, Pennsylvania, 40 miles north of Pittsburgh, a rural oasis for water lovers and off-roaders.
It's a heavily wooded area with a lot of small towns, a lot of hills, and it's very beautiful.
Jordan's childhood is filled with typical birthday parties, petting zoos, and pony rides, his dad closely by his side. Jordan's grin lighting up his elementary school photos year after year.
What was Jordan like? What kind of kid was he at 11?
It's a fat, ugly kid. He's an ugly kid.
All-American child. You know, played sports, baseball, football, had friends.
Yeah, what went wrong?
This is Jordan Brown today. Now 21, remembering that tender, precious time in his life, fondly.
What kind of childhood would you say you had up until 11?
Normal, I guess. I mean, had friends always coming over. We used to always play and, like, games, like video games.
And back then, Chris was happy too, working and shipping at a local tableware factory, engaged to a woman he'd known since his teens, Kenzie Houck, a hairstylist and stay-at-home mom, also a single parent. Mother.
There's a problem right there, because this woman, hairstylist, and she gets bad haircuts. See, as soon as you get bad haircuts, you're going to die. That's what happens. That's what happens. This kid, first of all, this kid was an ugly kid. He was a fat, ugly kid. But he played football, so he seemed okay. Up until 11, he was fine. Had 11 good years of his life. I don't know what went wrong. But you can guess it. I guessed it. You know, after 11 years old, Uncle Bud visiting the house. You know Uncle Bud. Everybody has an Uncle Bud. You know what Uncle Bud did. You know, it starts off with, hey, you want to play with my Hot Wheels? And then the kid goes, cool Hot Wheels. And then Uncle Bud lays the track down and everything. And then you slide the Hot Wheels down. And the little kid goes, oh, that's cool. And then Uncle Bud says, hey, look at my track. And then the kid goes, oh. And then the next thing you know, you want a spanky? It starts with Hot Wheels. And you go, why are you spanking me with the track? He goes, because that's how Hot Wheels is. And then, but I was supposed to play with the car. And then you say, yeah, but the car is off the track, so now we have to fix the track. Well, why are you hitting me on my buttocks with the track? Because that's how Hot Wheels is. It's like boom, 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 boom. Next thing you know, you kill your stepmother, all because of Hot Wheels. It happens. It happens. Is the kid bad? No. It's Hot Wheels. I blame Hot Wheels. Because if he didn't learn to play Hot Wheels at a younger age, then you wouldn't have that track that you can take off and hit your buttocks. And I know that you're spanking your buttocks, and after a while you start like the spanky, and then the next thing you know, you got rid of the Hot Wheels, and you just like the track, and people think you're a freak, and you're weird, and you're in the house by yourself, and you live in the basement, and you have a cat. And then you see people as they walk by the house when it's snowing, because all you see is their ankles because you don't go outside. And then you commit murder. That's how it happens. I bet you that's how it happened. It was the Hot Wheels. Let's see how it happened until age 11. I guarantee it was Uncle Bud.
There are two young girls, 7-year-old Janessa and 4-year-old Adeline.
What made you love her?
Who she was. Who she was a person.
Kenzie was real feisty. She was funny.
Oh, you could tell that bitch was a smoker. Nobody's born with that voice. You know the ones that talk with the hole in their throat? Where's the whiskey? Oh, that one there, the real feisty one. You know, I don't need to get, where's my grandchildren? I'm going to get some more cigarettes. Give me my cigarette. Give me my Paul Malls. Give me your little kid. Listen to that voice. You tell me that was not a smoker and gin voice. Listen to this.
She always had a beautiful smile, like everybody, and she loved her children.
That's all she ever said when you say, what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be a mom. I want kids.
Kenzie and Chris and their kids had recently moved in together to this farmhouse. The new blended family seemed to be bonding. Jordan even called Kenzie mom.
What was your relationship like with your soon-to-be stepmom?
It was strong. She was really nice. I liked her a lot.
She bent over backwards for him.
She had it.
Sure, she bent over backwards for him. Bent over backwards, frontwards, reverse cowboy. She probably rode him wet. What did they say? That's what a cowboy say, the rodeo. I know this movie. I've heard this before. I watch Pornhub. I mean, heard things. Everything. Sure, she bent over backwards. You know, always be suspicious when somebody says, well, how was the relationship between you and your mom? Well, she bent over backwards for me. Yeah, you know what? You filthy, dirty son of a bitch. You naughty piece of shit. Yeah, that's what's wrong with the kid. That's why you committed murder. Your mother's like Gumby, and she's bending over backwards. You got a problem. That's when you call child services. You better do her missionary position like all mothers. How dare you be a freak to your mom? But anyway, here's the story. Bent over backwards. That starts. Watch the music going to change as soon as he says that.
Good relationship with them.
And a new sibling was on the way. Chris and Kenzie were eagerly awaiting a baby together, a boy they had already named Christopher.
She was thrilled. That's what she wanted. I had had a shower.
Yeah, the smoker. Yeah, I got a shower. Where's my Virginia Slims? Ah, get it, get grandma kissed. Let me get that tobacco breath on you. Get it. What's it? Grandma's gonna spit in that spittoon. Nobody emptied up that spittoon. Where's my chewing tobacco? Yeah, look at your grandma's teeth. Yeah, look like some rib bones. Yeah, everything was fine. See, nothing wrong here. All right, let's take a look at the grandma.
All the clothing was washed, diapers where they were supposed to be, and everything. Yeah, she was ready.
You were excited about the baby on the way?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You know what father wouldn't be? I was happy. I always wanted a little brother. And that's what...
Well, so far, so good. It's very dormant. You wanted a little brother, so you probably bend over backwards. Ain't nothing wrong with that family. It was a terrible tragedy. It started with the Hot Wheels, Uncle Bud. Next thing you know, he has a little brother who's bending him backwards. Sad, sad thing. Sad. Really sad. Let's continue the story.
It was a boy, so that's what I was going to get.
You were excited about
it? Yeah, I was really excited.
It's a frigid February morning in 2009. Kenzie is 8.5 months pregnant. But their hopes for a future together as a family are about to be shattered.
I remember getting up that morning, running a little late for work. She'd asked me to stay home that day, and I didn't, and that's something that's haunted me.
What do you remember?
It was just a normal morning. My sister, Janessa, woke me up.
Kenzie is asleep in the downstairs bedroom. Jordan is in his bedroom upstairs. Once the baby arrived, they were going to swap bedrooms, so Jordan had already moved his clothes downstairs.
Went downstairs, got my clothes, went in the bathroom, got dressed, and we just sat on the couch in the living room waiting. And then Kenzie told us to go because the bus is coming and we're going to be late, so we hurry up, went out the back door and ran down the driveway. Went to school.
Around 8:15 a.m., Jordan and Janessa leave for school. 4-year-old Adeline is asleep upstairs. 9 a.m., tree trimmers arrive to work around the house. A short time later...
See, that's the second warning time. Tree trimmers coming around to trim your bush. You can't trim your own bush because you need to trim to have the tree trimmers trim it. That's some big-ass bush. It's never good when you live in the woods and there's tree trimmers. Never good. And then the music starts to change. Scary parts start about to happen. Here you go.
A tree trimmer sees Adeline in the doorway, sobbing. She tells him her mother is dead. He calls 911.
And as we arrived on the scene and did our initial assessment, Kenzie was in the bedroom.
What was your impression?
At that point, we assumed that somehow she had hemorrhaged. We didn't touch her. We didn't move her. At that point, we're trying to maintain the integrity of the scene.
When did you realize you had a murder on your hands?
The coroner was taking photos, and I was standing right at the edge of the doorway. And I remember the coroner saying, as he started to touch the body, we have a problem. And that's when we realized that it was a homicide.
26-year-old Kenzie had been shot in the back of the head, execution style. Police attempt CPR, but it's too late. Then police make the dreaded call to Chris, telling him to come home immediately.
They told me that her and the baby were gone, and I remember collapsing in the yard. I lost it.
Chris Brown is interviewed at the state police barracks.
You're voluntarily giving us a statement.
Yes.
You're not under arrest or free.
Okay.
Was Chris Brown a suspect?
Well, when you open an investigation, you have to leave everything open as far as who may be suspects.
Chris describes his final moments with Kenzie.
Gave her a kiss, told her I loved her, she kissed me back, and I left.
Chris had been at work at the factory, and his hands are clean of gunpowder residue, so he's quickly eliminated as a suspect. Meanwhile, police head to Mohawk Elementary School to speak with the children. Kenzie's daughter, Janessa, doesn't report anything out of the ordinary. Sounded like a typical morning for Jordan, too.
There were two troopers at the time, I didn't know they were troopers.
and they asked me the same thing you just did, like, if anything unusual happened, and I just told them that, you know, it was just a normal morning.
But he does tell police he saw a black truck by the garage.
In the very first interview with police, you mentioned that you saw a vehicle in the driveway.
Well, I didn't think anything of it. You know, it was just a truck. I thought, you know, it was just some guy there, you know, doing work or something. But that's why I told him.
3:30 a.m. the following morning, a grieving father and son have just managed to finally nod off when the silence of the night is broken by someone pounding at the door.
I had just fallen asleep, and of course, the stressful day that we had.
You had just lost your fiance and your
unborn
child.
Absolutely. I don't even know how I fell asleep. Jordan was laying in my arm, bawling, and that's how we fell asleep. And we were woke up shortly after.
It's the police. They have a warrant to arrest 11-year-old Jordan Brown.
All I remember was they came and got me at 3 in the morning. They put me in the back of the car, and they took me to the police barracks, and I was in there, and then they took me straight to the county jail, and I had no idea where I was going. I wasn't with anybody. It was just a bunch of strangers. I was mind blown.
Wow. And we will continue that part and see what happened. We will continue that and see whatever happened to this 11-year-old kid in a minute. But first, we're going to go back to our main story about the turbines. But before we do that, we're jumping around a lot, right, folks? Hey, I got some time. We're going to talk about what's happening to, and it's not fair, that's what's happening to Dave Chappelle. This country has gone berserk. I'm not kidding, folks. You can't be a comedian in this country anymore. If people don't like what's going on with your act, they cancel you. So when we come back, we're going to do a little breaking news with Bannon. Only a little bit. Then we're going to do a little thing with Chappelle, and we'll get to our main story with the turbines. Because like I said, folks, I've been doing this show for over 10 years. People come into this studio, and they talk about child abuse. They write books. You got independent authors writing books about child abuse, sexual assault, blah, blah, blah. But I have never heard this story before about the turban kids. It is horrific. These kids could never be normal. Never. It's just a horrific story, and that's our main story. Why we're doing that? Because it's about child abuse. And to be plain and simple, there's a lot of people living and going through life who will have a secret, who are molesters, who've been molested, and once in a while they deal with that. Or they're not dealing with that, and you're not the only one. I am Brian the Hammer Jackson. And if you'd like to come into the studio, God, it's so early. I guess this is my regular time. Wow. If you'd like to come into the studio, you're more than welcome to. You can talk to me live. The number is 319-527-6099. 319-527-6099. And if you have a story of your own or you have a secret of your own that you have been molested and you can't handle it, there are hotlines. There are people you talk to. There are counselors. If you can't afford it, come on in the studio because you're not the only one. The number is 319-527-6099. That's the number that gets you in the studio. And we're going to take a break. That's why I'm going to get a little cup of coffee. And then we come back. We're going to talk about Bannon just a little bit. Then why it's dangerous to be a comedian in the United States anymore. That's it. You're listening to Brian Hammer Jackson on Hammer Radio 97. We'll be right back.
Joe DiMaggio, Joe McCarthy, Richard Nixon, Studebaker, Doug.
should be back because I'm still not making my coffee. It's taking a little longer, so we may have a quick break. You know, there was breaking news. I'm all over the place. Doesn't matter because it's news. This just came in. No, came in yesterday. It came in yesterday at 1:16 p.m. I don't know if you guys heard about this. A Utah kid, 4 years old, shot at police outside of McDonald's drive-thru. A four-year-old shot at police outside of McDonald's. And it shows the police arresting this motherfucker. He's 4 years old. Here's the footage. Here's the sound. Here's the sound effect. I have no idea why he did it. Listen to this. Now, mind you, there's five police surrounding this car. There's a four-year-old inside, scared to death, but he shot at police. And the police are going to the car door right now trying to open up the door. The kid won't open up the door. Remember, four-year-old. Here's what happened. Okay, let me just show you what happened there. You heard the body cam. Here, I lost the page. Here's what happened there. I'm going to kill the video sound. Utah police have released body camera footage showing, and you heard it. This was a February 12th incident in which a four-year-old shot at police officers at a McDonald's drive-thru in Midville. Officers with the Unified Police Department were responding to reports that a male suspect allegedly brandished a firearm at McDonald's employees due to an incorrect order around 1:30 p.m. That's local time. Once officer arrived and began to detain a 27-year-old Sadat Johnson, a child in the backseat of the vehicle fired a gun at the responders. In the body camera footage you just heard from the United Police Department released to Fox 13 in Utah, officers can be heard telling two distraught children, aged 3 and 4, in the backseat of Johnson's vehicle, it's okay, after one of the four-year-old children fired a single shot. Police initially detained Johnson after they asked him to exit his vehicle, and he refused to cooperate. According to a press release from the police department footage, it shows that officer forcibly removing the suspect from the driver's seat and handcuffing him on the ground. During the time, an officer noticed a gun pointing from a rear window of Johnson's vehicle, at which point he alerted other officers to the gun and pushed it to the side as it was fired. He also alerted other officers that it was a kid who fired the weapon. A preliminary investigation indicated that the 27-year-old instructed his child to shoot at the police officers. And that's what happened. The court records obtained by Fox 13 revealed that the child shot at the officers because he wanted his daddy back. Now, you can't blame the kid. I mean, that's what happens. I mean, the kid, he's only four, and they're taking his daddy away, so you should get the gun. Got a weapon, he's four. I'm sure he passed the background check. I'm sure he handled a gun before. So he shot at the officers because he wanted his daddy back. To have an adult think it's okay to encourage a four-year-old to pull a firearm and shoot at police illustrates how out of hand the campaign against police has gotten. That's what the sheriff said. I mean, he shot the sheriff, but he did not shoot the deputy. Uh-oh. You know what that means. I mean, he's 4 years old. I shot the sheriff. But, you know, this is what you can entitle white people are entitled. Now, a black man cannot get a carry because he'll get shot. But you can give a four-year-old some guns and shoot at a police officer at McDonald's. And, see, and then the officers will come into you, it's okay, and they give you a cookie. Entitlement. Entitlement. Something must be done. I think all four-year-olds should get a background check before they get firearms, and then they must go to class. And they have to show that they can lock up their guns, and that before they go to kindergarten, and they must put their guns in a safe little place. Because they, so they can grow up and shoot up the school. It's just how it works. Four-year-old shot at the sheriff. We'll be right back. Because Hammer needs to finish up that coffee. But I think there should be a law that four-year-olds should have some kind of firearm safety. White kids, not the black kids. Because if you're black holding a gun at four, you won't see five. We'll be right back. If you'd like to come into the studio, we're going to get our main story to Turbans. The number is 319-527-6099. I'm off the rails. These stories are true. We'll be right back when I get some coffee. I shot the sheriff. Thank you. There's a good story behind that song, but we don't have, I don't have time to tell you. But actually, it was a true story, though. It was a good story. Yeah, I shot the sheriff. Well, that's what happens when you're four. You have a story to tell. That's right. That's right. Yeah. That's right. I think they gave him a Happy Meal. Please, parents, please give your kids a gun and be responsible. Make sure that they're 3 and 4 and they're in a crib and that the bullets are out, and give the gun a cute little name like Tootsie or something. U.S. venue cancels comedian Dave Chappelle's show following the backlash. A U.S. venue canceled Dave Chappelle's stand-up show just hours before he was due on stage on Wednesday after critics lamented. Sorry. It's in the morning. Who cares? Shut up. Over controversy over the comedian jokes about transgender people. Transgender people are out of control. They're ruining everything. Transgender people are ruining everything. There's nothing good about transgenders. First of all, there is no such thing as a transgender. It's a fugazi. It's like, it's a mythical, magical thing. They're like unicorn children. But they're going after Dave Chappelle. They've been going after this guy for a long period of time. He's a comedian, and if you're a good comedian, you're going to insult people. It makes people laugh. That's what makes people laugh. That's what comedians do. They make fun of people. They make fun of white people. They make fun of black people. They make fun of stereotypes. That's what they do. Now, transgender don't have no humor. I never met a transgender person that had a ha-ha. Well, didn't think anything was funny. But why we're talking about transgender people when there's, why are we putting a name on these nutcases? On these mentally ill people? Why are we sanctioning transgender? There's no such thing. No such thing. There is no such thing as a transgender person. I'm saying that right now. Either you're a fag or you're not a fag. That's it. You can't be an in-between fag. You can't be fag to the second power and saying, you know what, I'm gonna invent a new thing of fagdom. So, you know, it's like, I'm not fag. I'm not gay. I'm not LGBT. That's why they have the Q, like, what? What the hell you are? Because they need new members. So I'm going to invent something called transgender because I feel that I'm not who I am. That's like giving a, now I'm not a religious man, but that's like giving a big middle finger to God. I don't feel like I'm a boy, but I got a dick so that I'm hung so big that even nurses will say I can't wait to his 18th birthday. You know what I mean? And what a waste of piece of meat. Let's say you're a boy and you're hung and you got like a 14-inch cock and everything, and you're look how amazing that magnificent muscle is, and all of a sudden you're saying, I don't want it. Well, give it to some other people. I'm sure the Chinese or a Jewish kid would love some of that. I mean, I'm sure they're like 3 and 4 or 5 inches. You know, you should donate some of that meat. But no, you're not grateful at all. You want to chop it off, and you want to be a girl. And let me tell you something. It drives me crazy. And if you're a transgender person, shut up, take your medication, shut the fuck up, and sit the fuck down. You stop it. Just behave yourself, because there's no such thing. You can never be a woman. You can never transition to a woman. You can never have ovaries. You can never have menopause. You can never have a baby. You cannot have a period. You cannot ovulate. What part of the woman that you think you are? Well, actually, it could be a good part because you're not complaining and you're not going to menopause and you're not having a period. You take that away from women and you got a great woman. Besides the fact, you could never have that. You can't be that. You can't take the best of a woman and say, that's who I am. I can give me the big tits. Give me the big tits and I'm going to make a vagina. Yes, I say vagina with an R. Some people call it a vagina. It's a vagina from Virginia. Or you want me to call it Virginia. Think about it. So you can't take the best of something and become that. That's like say to white dude, you know what, I feel like I'm a jazz musician. I feel like I'm really black inside. I don't feel white at all. So what do we call these people? We used to call them wiggers, remember? White people who think they're black and they're going to call them white niggers. We used to call them wiggers. What about those people? Like, I never felt really comfortable in my skin. I'm a white dude. I always feel comfortable being black. So I'm going to take the best part of black. I'm going to talk black. I'm going to be a fashion designer. I'm going to make designer clothes for black people for hip-hop. I'm going to rap. I'm going to be a rapper, but I'm really white as hell. I'm a phenomenon because I'm a white guy. You know what? I don't even have a real name. I'm calling myself Eminem. I'm going to steal the black people's song. I'll call myself Elvis Presley. But I'm really a white guy, but I consider black. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to get a big extension on my dick. I'm going to take the music. I'm going to take all this stuff. I'm going to take the hairstyle. Don't forget the wig. I'm going to get the wig as an afro. It's going to be like a rainbow afro because I'm black. I'm a white dude being black because I feel black. I'm going to get all the best of being black. And you know what? I get to drive through in a white neighborhood and not get stopped by the cops, not get pulled over by the cops, not get shot in the back by the cops, not getting harassed by the cops. So I'm going to take all the good part about being black and being cool and not the bad part. And that's what the transgender, there's no such thing, but if you want to be a transgender, I'm taking all the good stuff from the woman. I'm taking the tits, I'm taking the ass, I'm taking the clothes, I'm taking how I look. It's about a fashion statement, y'all. I'm getting the wig, I'm doing the dress up, I'm doing the makeup, I'm going out, I'm looking like a fag fool. And then I'm going to call myself a woman because I feel like a woman. You cannot feel like a woman. You cannot feel like a woman. Uh-oh, there's a song coming on. Wait a minute. Is there a song coming out? Is there a song coming up? Why do I have a song like, man, I feel like a woman? Is there a song? I don't think there's a song. Why do I think I'm going? I think I'm going nuts. But that's what it is. It's a transgender. You're taking the best part of a woman and you're claiming that. You're not getting the menopause. You're not getting the periods. You're not getting the ovulating. You're not getting pregnant. You're not carrying a human being for 9 months. So what part are you a woman? You got a fake vagina? I don't need a fake vagina. All you have to do is get one of those bottles. You know those plastic water bottles? Put your dick in a hole. It's wet in there. Shake it up and down. There you go. That's a plastic vagina. Yes, I said vagina, just like I said Virginia. You want me to say Virginia? So then you want to pick the best part of a woman and call yourself a transgender? Shut the fuck up. Won't you be a real woman where you get a job and you can only get paid half of what you're worth? Go to a job and being sexually harassed and nobody pays attention to you. Be afraid to go out and walk in the heels in the middle of the night and go to the ATM and see if somebody is going to try to fuck you or pull you in an alley or take or abuse you and everything. You want to be a woman? Be a full woman. Shut the fuck up, transgender bitch. I didn't have my coffee yet. I got to get my coffee. I'll be right back. And we'll talk about Chappelle and our main story about the turbans. Man, I feel like a woman. I really do. I think there's a song like that, isn't there? I do.
Let's go, girls.
Well, that's our show for today. We'll get, no, it's not. So before we get there, we went sidetracked. No, I do not believe, I'm on Facebook, no, I do not believe there's a such thing as transgender and quit, what do you call it, catering to these nut cases. 319-527-6099 is the number. You take the best part of any group and you call yourself that, right? Think about it. Nobody thought about that. I use an example, and I have been around. I'm a black guy. I've been around white people who said, you know what, I don't feel white. They talk black. I don't know what talking black is, but, okay, they do hip-hop and rap and clothes and everything and down, and they feel black. So are they black? When they take the best part of black, fine. But being black is also getting in a car at 10 p.m. and looking at the cops when they stop you and beat the shit out of you or shoot you in the back. See, you don't have that. So when you take away that fear and you take away the gang fear and you take away everything else. You take about fear of supporting your family, getting a job, supporting yourself, living in a good neighborhood if you can, the prejudice and everything. See, you're not taking that with you. You're taking the best part with you. See, but you can't do that. And so you're taking the best part of everything and you're calling yourself that. But to order to be black, you got to take everything. In order to be a woman, you got to take everything. Everything. Not just playing dress up and being like a little fag monkey. Let me perform for you. Dance, little monkey, dance. And then you have the nerve to be mentally disabled with your kids. When your kids come home and they want to be a little mentally, they're mentally fucked up too because they think they want to be another gender. True. In a statement on his website, the First Avenue in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Chappelle said that the show would move to the city's Varsity Theater, where the U.S. comedian is also due to perform on Thursday. Chappelle drew a backlash last year for material in his Netflix comedy special, The Closer. Netflix, LGBTQ. You know what? I think we should call these people. Give away Chappelle tickets. See if they take it. That's what we should do. I usually have a co-host. Usually have a co-host with me so I can stall some time while I make a live call. And I really do want to make a live call to these LGBTQ people, LGBT people. Award them some Chappelle tickets. You know, call it some kind of venue like Fagopolis. Or they love the word fabulous. Fag fabulous. How come that's not a word? That you see somebody, some queer, coming to you and he's dressed really nice. Isn't he fag fabulous? How come that's not a word? Fag fabulous. I didn't even coin that phrase. You look fag fabulous. Maybe they should say that to straight men who dress up. You know what I mean? At a premiere, you're fag fabulous. I like that. Fag fabulous. Chappelle drew a backlash last year for material in his Netflix comedy special, The Closer, that some in the LGBTQ community said ridiculed the transgender people. His supporters viewed it as a cry against the cancer culture. To the staff, artists, and other community, we hear you and we are sorry. We have to apologize to the fags. Now, these make-believe people have make-believe sensitive feelings, so you have to apologize to them. Apparently, when they're doing the transgender, they didn't transgender the humor with them. So they made an apology. We are sorry. We know that we must hold ourselves to the highest standard. You're a comedian. You're a clown. What do you mean hold yourself to a higher standard? You're supposed to go to the lowest standard. That's who you are, a comedian, you dumb fuck. You're there with the funny nose, the honky noise. You come out of the car with the eight midgets behind you. You're a comedian. What do you mean you're holding yourself? I have never seen a comedian hold himself at the highest standard. Can you imagine a comedian holding himself at the higher standard? Imagine those jokes. Stupid. We know we let you down. We're not just a black box and people in it. And we understand that First Avenue is not just a room, but meaningful beyond our walls. The First Avenue team and you have worked too hard to make our blah, 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 blah. Blah, blah, blah. A representative for Chappelle could not immediately be reached for a comment. I guess this is Netflix. In May, the Emmy Award-winning entertainer was tackled on stage during his show at the Hollywood Bowl in Los Angeles. A 23-year-old man was charged for a misdemeanor count. Had a kick the mother. They kicked his ass, though. They did kick his motherfucking ass. Charging the stage. Mm. Ladies and gentlemen, Bannon.
On the offense on this and stand by.
Now, in a stunning turnaround, the diehard Trump ally and political operative is offering to testify to the January 6th committee.
Offer not accepted because it wasn't a full offer. And we're back with former federal prosecutor John Flannery covering what is this first day of the criminal trial of Mr. Bannon. I emphasize that in the past, he has found occasion to cooperate. He has found occasion to evade. It makes a big difference if you know the incumbent president.
Right.
It appears the jig is up. What is today about?
What it's about is we're piercing that veil of these powerful, omnipotent people who thought they could do anything in their arrogance. And he's already on notice that his defenses are not going to hold up. The judge is not going to allow them because they're not real defenses. And so he's at risk to be the first of the inner circle to go down. And even though it's going to be jail time or a suspension or something, there's blood in the water. That's the way I see it.
Really striking. And he's just, we're told, walked out of the court. We covered the jury selection today.
All right.
Most people, as you know, on day one of their criminal trial, don't give a lot of public remarks.
Right.
But, you know, some of these folks are different.
True.
We're not going to give excessive attention to this, but I do endeavor to show his side. I did mention he's legally presumed innocent. We mentioned that in all trials. And I want to show briefly what he just said leaving the court. Let's take a listen.
Sure.
We would have been more productive if we'd been on Capitol Hill in front of open mics addressing the nation with exactly all this nonsense, this show trial they've been putting up on Capitol Hill. It's nothing but a show trial. It's time they start having other witnesses. They can give other testimony other than what they've been putting up.
So fact check, we're not covering his criticism of a different proceeding. He is doing something we've seen before, trying to put somebody else on trial. But what does it tell you that he is continuing here on day one to try to at least put out in the public realm the idea that he wants to testify, which we heard from committee members last week who said, well, he hasn't provided the documents. He hasn't fully cooperated in any way.
Right. Well, he had the chance to cooperate. It's kind of his defense isn't working in court, so he's still selling it to the public, even though it's not going to be allowed in court, which is I just can't wait to get to a microphone and talk about what I knew and what happened. But he hasn't done anything to do it. And I think part of the defense is going to be, oh, you know, we didn't think the date was firm, that we had some wiggle room on that. Well, you know, before they passed the resolution, you know, maybe Bob Costello's counsel could have called up the general counsel and said, hey, what are you doing that for? We'll be there in the afternoon, but they didn't do it. So just like that juror said, you know, I don't significantly believe anything he says, and that's why he was kicked off the jury. Well, there got to be a lot of others by the time this jury's over will come to the same conclusion based on the evidence in the courtroom.
By the way, do you want to give us a refresher on voir dire? Because
sure.
The best way I could say it is if a juror says something reasonable, they've seen someone lie, so they no longer believe them.
Right.
On the one hand, that's a reasonable view to hold, and they're being honest under voir dire, under that type of question.
Right.
On the other hand, in fairness to any defendant, I say this for any defendant, including Mr. Bannon,
right.
That person does not belong on his jury. Explain.
Well, the theory is that we want something that doesn't exist, which is somebody that doesn't even participate in the world around them and hasn't seen.
See, this is why I hate this 24 hours bullshit news. They quit doing the facts. And then they're talking about theories the rest of the time. Well, what Bannon wants is, Bannon wants that, blah, blah, blah. He'll probably do this. This is where I hate it, where it becomes opinionated and it's bullshit. Bannon will probably go to jail for about 30 days, federal club fed, and become a hero. That's what's going to happen to Bannon. Enough of that. I promise you something. And you're going to get it. When we come back, the turban people. Yeah, can you imagine that? Wow. It's our main story. Escape from a house of horror, the turban family. On the night of January 4th, I wish we had the scary music. On the night of January 14, 2018, a 17-year-old Jordan Turban, she made a daring escape from her home and called 911. In order to save herself and her siblings from their abusive parents. Child abuse of the worst kind. I don't understand. Don't understand. When we come back, that story. You're listening to me, Brian Hammer Jackson, 319-527-6099. Come on in the studio if you'd like to talk. If not, when we come back, the story about the turban. Yes. We'll be right back. Get the turbans in there. Yeah.
Made a wrong turn once or twice.
To your kids. They're not perfect, right? So let's abuse them. They're not great, so let's abuse them and hurt them. That's pretty sad. The Turban family coming up. Brian Hammer Jackson. We'll be right back.
I never felt so
know everybody got problems. Yeah, but waiting on my way to solve them. I really came up from the bottom. Struggling my mama on the last dollar. Hustling, man, I've been putting in these hours. The government been trying to take away what's ours. Really all about the money and the power. I just wanna see my people in power. Tell me how we gon' shape this vision. Complaining all day but in the same condition. If you wanna make change, it's gon' take commitment. Some people enslaved by their religion. Can't emancipate the fundamental principles. When I see two options, transform the wisdom. Watch me use my prophets, get them on the listen. I've been on a mission. And I really can't take it no more. I've been fighting temptations, my Lord. I've been hanging on rivers, and I really can't help it. I never felt selfish before. I've been living so reckless, I know. Tell me, Lord, can you help me? I said, Lord, can you help me? Everybody got fights, yeah, but wouldn't know what good advice was. Still ain't leaving lifeless. Another mama crying, it's another crisis. Lord knows we just trying to live right here. Are you willing just to make the sacrifices? I know we can't continue living like this. And I never sell my soul cause that's priceless. Tell me how we gon' make a living. Hustle on the block, who gon' save the children? Man, it's all a plot and I'm just revealing. The media just trying to make a villain. I just take the pain and paint a picture. Voices in my head, I hear the whispers. When I feel it's way in hell, it's listen. Oh, I sip the liquor, ah! And I really can't take it no more. I've been fighting temptations, my Lord. I've been hanging on rivers, and I really can't help it. I never felt selfish before. I've been living so reckless, I know. Tell me, Lord, can you help me? I said, Lord, can you help me? I really can't take it no more. I've been fighting temptation, my Lord. I'm living on presence. I said, Lord, can you help me? I've never felt selfish before. I've been living so reckless, I know. Tell me, Lord, can you help me? I said, Lord, can you help me?
There you go. Escape from the house of horror. Can you imagine your life is going on, you don't not thinking anything, right at this point right now, at this minute, you're looking at your grandbabies or your kids graduating from school, whatever, getting ready to go back to school. At this moment, somebody's being abused. They're hurting. They're being slapped. They're being abused, sexually abused. Some little fucked up kid who thinks he's a transgender, wearing a dress, should get his ass kicked. And he wonder why he's getting his ass kicked? Shut up. It's your fault. Stop with the nonsense. Stop it. So imagine the Turbin family going through all this mess. Well, we're just going with our life. We had no idea what was going on. The number is 319-527-6099. That's the number. You know what I mean? Can you imagine that? The horror. Just the horror that some people are living. And we're going on with our stupid lives. Right? Some people are being abused and hurt. How can you abuse a kid? You know? How can you do it? Look at your kid right now. The innocent look. They count on you and everything. And you're beating them. Because what's trending right now while we're doing this story, it's something about the Rings of Power. Rest in peace, Eric. I don't know who Eric is. Chef. I don't know who Eric is. Eric Trump. funnel cancer charity money to his business associate. Anything with Trump is a scam. Who's Eric? I don't know who Eric I am. Anyway, I have no idea. Free Julian Assange. You know, you people on Twitter, I wish they'd get rid of Twitter. I really do. I wish they'd get rid of all social media. I'm tired of it. It's nothing but bullshit and stupid talk. Just want to get out of Twitter. But anyway, that's what's trending on my end. Stupid stuff. That's what's trending. Okay. So, that leads us back to Escape from House of Horrors. And here it is. Like I said, the reason we're doing this is that I have been doing this for 10 years, and I've interviewed many artists who claim or allegedly said they were molested. They wrote books about it. They were vague. Escape from House of Horror, Part 1. Here it is. It's 5:49 a.m. It's in Paris, California, January 14, 2018.
A security camera is rolling in a quiet suburban California neighborhood. At the house across the street, in the shadows, someone quietly opens a window and slips out. Watch, there. A blurry figure stepping forward, a small, uncertain girl, heading one way. Then she turns, hesitates, and starts to run. Touching an old cell phone.
That was my only chance. At least if something happened to me, at least I died trying.
911 emergency, what are you reporting?
This is 911, do you have an emergency?
I just ran away from home.
Do you know what street you're on?
No. I just ran away from home because I live in a family of 15, okay? Can you hear me? And we have abusing parents. Did you hear that?
Okay, how did they abuse you?
Okay, they hit us, they throw us across the room. They pull our hair, they yank out our hair. I have my two little sisters right now are chained up.
Okay, how old are you?
I'm 17.
What's your name?
Jordan Turkin.
Okay, I'm going to connect you to the Sheriff's Department so that they can help.
What?
One moment, don't hang up.
I won't.
A second dispatcher picks up.
Hello?
Oh, yes, I'm still here.
Nearly 4 years later, this is Jordan Turpin remembering that night.
My whole body was shaking, and when I was holding the phone, I remember the phone was I couldn't really dial 911 because, I'm sorry.
Shaking,
yeah, I was shaking it, so I was trying, to dial 911, but I couldn't even get my thumb to press the buttons because I was shaking so bad, but I was trying to calm down. Thank you so much. I was trying to calm down so I could to do it, and then I finally pressed it, and then they answered. I literally never talked to somebody on the phone.
What's your address?
Okay, you got to give me a minute. This is gonna take a while. I've never been out. I don't go out much, so I don't know anything about the streets or anything.
The dispatcher tracks her location from the GPS on her cell phone and sends out a request for a police officer.
A deputy across town volunteers. He's 14 minutes away.
And I was freaking out because I was like, wait, are they going to take me back there? Like, I was so scared in that moment. I was actually on the road because I didn't even know about the sidewalk. You're supposed to be on the sidewalk, but I never been out there.
The caller tries to find her house address on a piece of envelope she stuffed in her backpack.
My address is 92570574. Did you get it?
Okay, so now you just gave me a whole bunch of numbers. You didn't give me any kind of street name there.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Okay. Those are the numbers on my house.
That's your zip code. The numbers on your house should only be 3 digits.
Finally, she reads the correct address, but is panicking, not knowing whether her parents can look out a window and see her.
Are you in a corner right now?
I might be.
Is there a street sign? Is there a pole with two names at the top?
I just see a stop sign.
Okay, can you go over and stand right at that stop sign?
Yes.
And then eventually I saw a stop sign, and I stood by the stop sign, and she told me to stay there. And I was like, I'm scared they're going to come. Like, I wanted to leave. I was so terrified because I know the way they were. They wouldn't care if they knew police were coming. They would just kill me right there and there if they realized that, especially if they knew I was on the phone with the police.
But she tries to remain brave because of her siblings. She is their hope.
The reason I ran away from home was because the chains were making places and they will wake up at night and they will start crying. And they wanted me to call somebody and tell them. And so I wanted to call y'all so y'all can help my sister.
Do you think anybody in the house will need to go to the hospital?
I'm not sure. Sometimes we live in filth, and sometimes I wake up and I can't breathe because how dirty the house is. We never take baths.
When was the last time you had a bath?
What?
When was the last time you had a bath?
Almost a year ago.
I had to make sure that if I left, we wouldn't go back and we would get the help we needed, because if we went back, there's no way I would be sitting here right now.
I don't know how you had the courage, never having spoken to anyone like that.
I think it was like us coming so close to death so many times, and like I was worried about my siblings, and when I saw them crying and worried, I just felt like I had to do it. I just wanted to do it. I wanted to help everyone.
Do you know if your parents keep any kind of weapons in the house?
I think that my father has a gun.
Have you seen the guns?
No, but they've talked about it.
The dispatcher knows if this girl with the strange cadences and vocabulary hangs up or the call drops, there's no way to get her back. Her old phone has been disabled. It can only call out to 911. So the dispatcher tries to keep her talking.
Do you know what your dad's name is?
He's Turpin. I don't know much about my mother.
She doesn't
spend time with us ever.
Does anybody at the house take any kind of medication?
I don't know what medication is.
Any medicine?
When we have a cold, sometimes we take Robitussin.
At incredible speed, the girl rattles off the names and ages of each sibling. Their names have been redacted.
He's 2. He's 11. Oh, 14, 16. I'm 17, 18, 19, 20, 22, 23, 5, 29.
The deputy is now just 7 minutes away.
I just want to stay on the phone with you. How did you get this phone that you have?
It was a phone that my brother had that he was going to throw away. And I had to have a way to contact somebody like you, so I got it so I could call 911.
And you guys don't have any friends or anybody who comes over to the house?
Hi. Okay.
Is that the deputy?
Okay. Yes.
Go talk to him, okay?
Yes.
All right. Bye-bye.
Hi, Jordan.
You are looking at the body camera footage from the deputy as he arrives.
Hi, what's going on?
Moving into frame, the skittish girl. who has to convince this stranger her story is real.
I was so nervous because I've never had like a conversation with a stranger before. And so I saw him, and he was so serious. He was tall, and I've never talked to a stranger. I was so like scared. I didn't know what he was thinking because he had just one straight face.
You didn't know if he believed you or not.
Right. He was like, "Do you have any proof of any of this?" And I was like, "Yes." He knew they were real. Yeah, they were obvious. They were real.
When we come back, those photos, the body cam footage, and what the deputy saw that changed everything.
Hi, everyone. George Stephanopoulos here. Thanks for checking out the...
It's really horrific. Horrific stuff. So like I said, the reason we're playing this is because I got independent authors coming on all the time, and people have been molested, and people keep that little secret, and I mean, there's some serious stuff going on right here. And we're going to continue playing it. It's 6:11 a.m. now. Again, this is in Paris, California, and here you go.
You're watching footage from a body camera. A deputy walking up to an anxious girl with a disjointed story.
Hi, what's going on?
Okay. I just ran away from home.
Okay.
And I live in a family of 15.
Okay.
My two little sisters right now are chained up.
They're chained up?
Yes.
Where are they chained up at?
On their bed. Now, mother didn't chain them up to be me. Okay.
Perfect.
They're chained up because they stole mother's food.
Uh-huh.
But I'm sorry if I talk too much. Okay. I've never talked to anybody out there, so I've never been alone with a person, so this is very hard for me to talk. Okay.
How did you, do your parents know you left your house?
No, they don't.
Do you take any medication?
With medication.
Medication?
Yeah, with medication.
Do you take pills?
Oh, I've never taken a pill before.
Okay.
Right, I haven't. But...
The girl with the strange vocabulary nervously puts on a little hat, a reminder of one of her sisters who's depending on her.
My parents are abusive. They abuse us. But the reason I called and the reason I managed to get out here, this is one of the most scary things I've ever done.
Uh-huh.
I'm terrified. But I called because my two little sisters are chained up right now.
The deputy, a 9-year veteran of the force, is not sure what to make of this 17-year-old girl who looks so much younger. He is ending a graveyard shift, and it's been a hard night.
Robbery calls, assault calls, deputies were shot at.
He responded to the runaway call because he knows how they usually end. You take the kids back home to reconcile with their parents.
I decided to take it, thinking, hey, this might be a good way just to end my shift.
And then... On instinct, he asks a question.
Do you have pictures of that?
I can show you. I actually didn't have it, and then one of my sisters told me I need to get pictures.
You have pictures of your sisters chained up?
Yes, but they're in here. I don't have proof of everything, but I have proof that my sisters are chained up. So, see?
She doesn't seem to know the word bruised.
Did you look at that? See, those are the places that make in on them. And see how dirty she is? We're so filthy. We don't take baths. We don't.
How did your sisters get like this?
Oh,
your parents chained them up?
Yes, because they stole food.
Okay.
But they stole it because they were hungry.
Who took this picture?
I did. I took those pictures.
Okay. You make sure to save these, okay?
Okay, I will.
Don't get rid of those.
I will. I won't.
They looked very, very sad and malnourished. They were very pale.
This is that deputy, Anthony Colacci.
Once I saw that photo, it really sealed the deal for me.
Colacci knows this girl is not your usual runaway. She has identified a possible crime in progress, and her parents could be trying to find her.
Can you do me a favor, take a seat in the back of my car?
Okay.
Do you have any injuries? Are you hurt?
Oh, no. Not right now.
Colacci radios in for backup.
One Parish 32, can I have 1110?
With his body cam running, he gathers more facts, trying to piece this story together.
What are your parents going to do when they find out you left?
They're going to want someone to kill me.
What's the worst thing they've done to you?
They have choked me against the bed and...
Did you call the police?
I don't. I didn't have a way to get a phone yet. This is the first step by the phone.
Suddenly, she remembers another detail, a horror recounted as part of her everyday life.
Oh, my brother's chained up.
They're chained up?
One of my brothers is chained up. So three people are chained up right now.
What does your mom do?
Nothing. She just stays at home. But she's always gone.
Well, why don't you guys just leave the house?
Because we're terrified. We don't really have a way. Everyone's always looking. There's always somebody.
Deputy Kalachi is stunned by the girl in the back seat with limited words and so much courage.
I asked her what her middle name was. She said it was Elizabeth. I asked her to spell it. She couldn't spell it. I wanted her to know people on the outside are loving and caring.
He notices a video on her cell phone. She's singing. He asks to watch it.
You made me fall down the field. I don't understand.
This is a great video and you're a beautiful singer.
Daylight arches over a pleasant suburban neighborhood. It's Sunday. Most residents are still asleep. Quietly, Riverside County Sheriff's deputies pull up to a house. On the outside, a house just like the others. It has been an hour and a half since Jordan Turpin climbed out the window.
So they were like, if we walk in, will they still be chained? And I was like, if they didn't notice me missing yet, yes. But if they notice me missing, they're going to try to cover that all up. And they asked me if I wanted to come up, and I was freaking out. I was like, no. Like, honestly, I thought, like, knowing them, what if they killed me right there and there, even if the police were there?
Staying doing a welfare check?
Yeah.
Since a child may be in danger, the deputies do not need a warrant to enter the house. They knock for 2 minutes and 10 seconds.
You're obviously not home.
Then, suddenly, the door cracks open.
Hi.
Hi.
A mother and father appear.
How are you doing?
Good.
We got a call for a check of welfare. Here's your house.
They are breathing heavily.
Yeah, why?
You guys have kids in the house?
Yeah. Okay, what kind of
coffee
did you get?
How you doing, sir? Okay.
Well, we were just in bed. I mean, like...
David and Louise Turpin, who have concealed a chamber of horrors for almost 30 years, now watch as deputies start to make their way through the door.
Well, we're going to come in and check, okay?
And in one of the rooms inside the house, someone is waiting in her bed, eyes wide open, praying. The knock on the door means her sister made it to freedom.
Knock, knock, knock. And I'm like, and then they said it's the police. I'm like, this is it.
In the next hour, we will show you the video as it happens, what law enforcement sees when they walk into the house, their first encounter with emaciated children, some of them chained to their beds.
It's a very interesting story, true story about the Turpins. You can read about them. You can go. We'll try to finish it to see what time it is. Am I running low? Let's see. One more segment, then we'll leave. But this is a horrific story. Just horrific. I have to say this. 319-527-6099 is the number to the studio. And we're gonna play one more 10 minutes of this, and then we're gonna leave. And here we go.
Travelers from the dark world who invented their own light. It's been 4 years since the day in January 2018 when they were rescued, treated at a hospital, and given new life. Jordan Turpin, now 21 years old. Her sister, who helped plan the escape, the oldest Turpin child, Jennifer, now 33. How are you?
Awesome. I'm doing really good.
January 14th, 2018.
Big day.
What's the first thing you did that you look back on and think, that was my first moment of real freedom?
Actually being in the hospital. When music was playing, I got up. And I made sure there was a little bit of a floor cleared out, and I danced.
The first place we went to a park with two of my sisters, and I was so excited because I could smell the air, I could smell the grass. I was like, how could heaven be better than this? Oh my gosh, this is so free, like, this is life.
They are speaking for the first time, ready to talk about their lives, but respecting the privacy of the siblings they love, and the stories written on all their bodies when they arrived at the hospital, where doctors and nurses wept at what they saw. Children so emaciated they had difficulty walking, stunted growth, heart damage from a lack of nutrients, a preteen whose arm was the size of a four-month-old baby, their speech, their language limited by the isolation and neglect.
All of us went through a lot, and all of us went through our own things, and to be honest, not even all of us know every single thing each one of us went through.
And nothing's ever going to be that bad. And nothing's going to be as bad as 29 years in what the only word I know to call it is hell.
A hell created by her own parents, who started out two kids growing up in a small town in West Virginia. David Turpin, by all accounts, a nerdy boy with bowl-cut hair and a shy stutter. He graduated from Virginia Tech and was offered a well-paid job at Lockheed Martin. Louise Robinette, a girl 6 years younger, a member of the Bible Club. She sang in the choir. She grew up suffering a family secret, which we'll tell you later. This is their wedding photo. She's just 16. They are a couple both steeped in the Pentecostal church, with its message about the insidious power of the devil and the rules, no drinking, no sex before marriage. And that's how the young couple began life in this nice house in a nice neighborhood in Fort Worth, Texas. They tell family God has called on them to have as many children as they can. He is 26, she's 20 when they have their first little girl. There's Jennifer. You can see her smile is so much like the smile of the mother she once loved.
My first memory, I was about 2 years old, and it wasn't to me.
What was it?
I went downstairs for a glass of water, for a cup of water, and on the stairs, I saw my father yelling very loudly at my mother. My mother was crying. She started to say something. He's like, no, shut up. And he took his fist and punched it in the wall, made a hole in the wall. I was terrified.
As her father yells in anger, she says her loving mother heads into unpredictable mood swings.
Like, I never knew which side I was going to get of her, if I was going to ask her a question. Like, she's going to call me stupid or something. But anyway, and then, or like, yank me across the floor, or is she going to be nice and answer my questions?
Neighbors are never invited inside that house, where the bright white walls are now gray with dirt and stains, carpets with human filth. The shower floor seems black with mold. When Jennifer shows up at grade school, she's a little girl with unwashed hair, unwashed clothes.
I remember wanting to make friends. I remember a lot of them didn't want to be my friend, didn't really understand why. They called me skinny bones and acted like they didn't want to be around me. I probably smelled, but I didn't realize at the time I smelled. But that stench clings to you. It stays with you because we would literally live in houses piled with trash, and I mean literally piled with trash, mold and everything. And there's no good way to get rid of a smell like that. So it was all my clothes, it was on me. And I think that had a lot to do with it.
Is it possible that some of her teachers noticed something? Years later, there are no records from the school. But after the third grade, Jennifer's parents take her out, and no Turpin child will go to grade school again. The family moves into an isolated house in rural Texas. David Turpin commutes to Lockheed Martin. They pose for photographs to send home to family. As four kids become nine, nine become 12. But when they go back to the house, the children are not allowed outside. All of them taught to honor thy father and mother, and only to call them that.
I'm going to call them mother and father for the sake of the interview, but I don't like calling them that, because they're not that to me. They literally use the Bible to explain their behavior toward us.
What parts of the Bible?
They love to point out things in Deuteronomy, saying that we have the right to do this to you, that they have the right to even kill us if we didn't listen.
Disobey mother. Talk back. Steal a piece of candy. You can be thrown across the room. Push down the stairs. Father also used belts and sticks and eventually dog kennels with padlocks and homemade cages. Jennifer draws the shape of the cage.
And every day did you wake up in terror?
Yeah. Because I was afraid to do one little thing wrong. If I did one little thing wrong, I was going to be beat. And not just beat, like beat till I bled.
Okay, you
want to
take a minute?
I want to take a break. Yeah, a little break. I'm
okay.
Sorry.
Let's do. We'll just take a break here.
Wade Walsvik, lead investigator on the Turpin case, a 33-year veteran of abuse and homicide cases.
How long did it take you to figure out that this was unlike anything you'd seen before?
Probably within the first couple days.
The parents move their children further off the radar, a trailer behind the house, and then they abandon them to seek their own adventures. They drop off weekly groceries, never enough. Jordan was six when her parents left. She says at times she ate leaves, grass.
There was a lot of starving, so I would have to figure out how to eat. Like I would either eat ketchup or mustard or ice.
Ice cubes and ketchup?
Yeah.
And Jennifer is forced to discipline the children by putting them in father's cages.
Cages that they were instructed to put their siblings in, or that they would be put in if they didn't.
That is a nightmare choice.
This is why she struggled so hard as a 17, 18, 19-year-old. So much.
It's not a choice if survival is
the answer. But living in that, you kind of feel like you're torn. You don't know what to do. Because I was on the brink of suicide. I wanted to just end it all my pain. Everything.
3 years go by, and no one seems to notice them. No one intervenes. But after the Turpin story breaks, a little boy remembers he once had a classmate in Fort Worth named Jennifer Turpin, a frail girl with a brave smile. He has since become a doctor. He wrote this plea on Facebook. Jennifer Turpin was the one girl nobody wanted to be caught talking to. I can't help but feel an overwhelming sense of guilt and shame. The person who sat across from you at the lunch table went home to squalor and filth, while you went home to a warm meal and a bedtime story. The resounding lesson, teach your children to be nice. Befriend the Jennifer Turpins of the world. Coming up, the video of David and Louise Turpin celebrating their love story.
Baby.
Certainly their abused children will keep their secret. What did they tell these children that paralyzed them with fear of the outside world?
Hi, everyone. George Stephanopoulos.
There you go. Escape from a house of horrors. It's the Turpin family. It's all true. And you wonder the nonsense that we're looking at, you know, Donald Trump can running for president and all this other bullshit nonsense. But there are some people being abused right now. There are some kids who are being afraid and who will grow up to abuse. There are some people who are holding a secret about Catholic priests abusing them when they're like 50 years old. So many secrets. So many people living in shadows. This is part four, and we will end our show here. We're talking about the Turbin family. Escape from House of Horrors. 13 children were starved, tortured, and they lived in filth. Turbin family.
In a Las Vegas chapel, a middle-aged couple is renewing their vows. The chapel is filming the occasion.
I take you away.
And while their children were starving in that Texas trailer, and
I guess I just fucked up that song with Elvis. Every time I think of that song with Elvis now, I'm thinking about these fucked up people who are abusing kids. It's a good song. It's in my head. You know what's going to happen. I can't succumb to my mental illness of something getting in my head and then I have to play it. It's only mental illness. Can't do it. But they're in a wedding chapel here in Vegas, and I guess they're dancing to the song. Let me see.
And while their children were starving in that Texas trailer, investigators say the devoted couple had moved into a motel to go out drinking, posting photos of their adventures. And now the children they had abandoned are in the chapel with them, dressed in identical outfits, to celebrate their parents' love story.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
We got this Las Vegas singer, who's the worst Las Vegas singer. The song's in my head. 319-527-6099. I will refrain from playing that song. Who am I kidding?
So these are the pictures that we saw.
Doing something. At the same time, I know inside I was like, this is all a mask. This is all fake. We're not this big happy family that they always betray everyone. And that always bothered me. And it was like I was a mix of things in that moment that I was feeling personally. She would get us all dressed, we would get clean, and then we would go out, and it would be like the best day ever. We were so happy, all of us.
Falling in love with
you. But then when we would come back, it was just like put on the same dirty clothes and sit back to wear. And I used to always wonder, like, why couldn't we just be a family like that all the time?
The family now lives under one roof in Paris, California.
Yeah. 111, you're live on the air with Brian Hammer Jackson, 111. Hello, 111.
Hey there, boy.
Hey.
Hey, this is why you will never be a high thousandaire. You're inconsistent.
This is why I will never claim you as my adopted son. You ingrate. A thousandaire.
Oh.
It was a thousandaire. You'll never be a hundredaire. What do you mean a thousandaire?
How have you been, numbnuts?
I've been good. You leave my numbnuts alone. How have you been?
Good. As
good.
Always.
You've been behaving yourself?
What does that mean?
That means you've been part of the world, being kind to people, treating women very nicely, be a gentleman like, moving society forward.
Go suck a
going
lemon,
to church.
Go suck a lemon. What does it mean to treat a woman nice?
I would smack you if you were my son.
Men are
make
learning
sure I
to
abuse
follow
you every
in the
Friday.
Footsteps. Men are
what?
Learning to follow in the footsteps of you regarding women.
What? Talking about, you know what? If more people were like me, there'd be less women getting divorces, and they would appreciate their husbands. They would love them and honor and obey as they should. That's what the Bible says. Not like you.
Okay.
And you know that's the problem. Let's talk about that seriously, because I do have a problem with millennials. I do have a problem, and it started with everybody gets a trophy. It starts with when you're different, nobody's different, one is different, we all are different. you know, we quit, we separate the mental illness, and instead of saying they're crazy, we empower them for their differences. And that, and which brings them to society, and we put them into society, and it made us weak. It made us crazy. This, I really believe, with that formula that millennial has, and I think the Gen Xers or whatever, trying to correct it, that I really believe that's what happened to our society. And now we got people who are from QAnon, we got people in Congress, we got people in Senate who have that kind of thinking that no one's an individual and difference is supposed to be celebrated instead of looked at very carefully. What's your view on that? Hold on 1 second. That might be you again. 111, you're live on the air with Brian Hammer Jackson. Everybody's in 111 today. You're live on the air. Hello.
Yeah, I think it's about time I got on the air today. How you doing,
hey,
Brian?
Hey, Mr. Celebrity Sarge, and I got Mr. Celebrity, Mr. Solution. Both you guys, you right-wing nutcases, how are you?
Hey, Sarge, how are you, sir?
No, how you doing, Mr. Solution? This is always a pleasure. It's always a pleasure to be on with the Hammer so I can sledgehammer this dude when he gets out of line. Hey, man, it's
right-wingers.
I ain't
right-winger. You and your
violence. I'm a Declaration of Independence constitutional conservative, and you better start learning the difference, because I'm definitely going to edumacate you as to what the difference
you're gonna
is.
You're going to edumacate me? Hey, Sarge, you know what? I'm glad you're on. I'm glad you're on. I know we're going to go off the subject, but I'm glad. Sarge is a former police officer. He has police officer experience in law enforcement. And Mr. Solution, of course, Mr. Solution knows everything. You ask him anything, and he has a solution for it, except how to get laid.
So
no, anyway.
I don't have a solution. I don't have a solution for everything.
Yes,
but
being modest
and
humble, you son of a bitch. Listen to you.
I have a solution for most important things, particularly to me.
Right. Well, let me ask Sarge this, and I think you can really talk upon this too, Mr. Solution. Sarge, lately there's been two things going on in the news. I need your help here. You know, the first one, you heard about the case about the guy, the cop stopping this guy. I can't even remember. There's so many. There's, but he gets out of the car with a ski mask, and he gets shot 60 times. Are you familiar with who I'm talking about maybe 3 weeks ago? You're familiar with
who
I'm talking about?
You mean the one who apparently, from the evidence that I've seen, fired a shot at the police officers first?
Well, so they say, because the gun was in the back seat, and they said it went off in the back seat. But
well,
I understand
it has been definitively determined, but I believe there certainly is at least preliminary evidence that he did fire a round at the police. And he was on a pursuit. They were pursuing him. So, again, we have another case of a black man killed when, guess what, resisting arrest. So let's get that, straight to that part of the mix.
Even though
I know you're asking the question, is it justified to shoot him 60 times? That's almost never the question, really, not legally. The question was one round justified?
That's what I was going to say.
If one round is justified, then 60 may be.
Right. It doesn't really matter how many
shots.
Because
after all, if he's dead with the first and second shot, what difference does the other 58 make?
Well, it shows overkill, it shows anger, it shows passion, it shows fear. It's almost like, Sarge, when you're going on a murder case and somebody kills his wife and you see that he stabbed her in the face 50 times, I mean, the detective's going to say, you know, once in the heart, okay, 50 times in the face, and then he stabbed her 3 times in the vagina. Something seriously wrong going on here. This is a little bit more personal than an average
stabbing. Well, that deals with motive when you're talking about things like that. In this case, we're talking about police procedure, and it's like a bifurcated question. Number one, what's legality in the case, and the police officers bear any criminal liability? That's one question. Number two is training and discipline. Now, the two are actually separate issues, both equally valid. One, a matter of procedure by the police department, because every round the police officer fires, he's got to be accountable for. So again, let me say, I'm trying to separate this because people conflate everything all the time when they talk about this stuff. And so the two things are exactly identical. Again, I was a trainer. I was a police firearms trainer. I was in a SWAT team. I did all that stuff. Same thing in the armed forces. I did the same staying in the armed forces. Training is vital. I'm a believer in training. I'm a believer in discipline. Yes, this indicates a potential problem with training and discipline in that department, and it needs to be addressed by that department. The question of whether or not the use of deadly force was justified is a separate question altogether.
Well, I'm going to ask you the question. I'm going to ask you the question that nobody's going to ask you. I'm going to ask you a question that no one will ever ask a police officer or a former police officer. Are white men afraid of black men? Let me ask you the question. White man with gun sees black man, big, tall black man, 255 pounds.
I knew a lot of white men when I was on the police force who had guns and used the guns to enforce law. I don't know of any who was afraid of anyone to the extent that they didn't want to do their job. I don't know of any of them.
Okay.
Now, that was the ones I served when I was there. Most of them were pretty gutsy. Many of them were former combat veterans, and they weren't afraid of too much. I mean, I was afraid, too. I mean, don't get me wrong. Certain situations, I was afraid. None of it was going to stop me from doing my duty. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's get one thing straight. Yeah, you could be afraid of an offender or a suspect. Sure. It's human. But you count on your training. You count on what you join the police force for, was to enforce the law and protect the public. And you say, the hell with it. I'm going to do what I got to do. Hey, man, you're wanted on this warrant. Only two things are going to happen. You're either going to defeat me and escape, or I'm going to take you into custody. I might have to hurt you in doing it. Now, what's your choice going to be? And that's the way it was going to be. It's going to be one of the two. And I'm telling you, when these people resist arrest, they just resist arrest and determine to resist arrest, and that's it.
All right, let me ask you a quick question.
And you
got to
do what you got to do. Now, look, we got to keep noting that all these things come about as a result of resisting arrest almost inevitably every single time. Resisting arrest. And things can get chaotic when you got a young, strong male who doesn't want to cooperate. All right?
Yeah.
There's a video going around, it's going viral in Cincinnati, Ohio, where these police officers are just going on a walk and talk with some suspect they want for arrest, and he's either amped up or high on something, he was just psychotic, or it's a combination of both, and they shot him six times with a taser, and it had no effect whatsoever. And he was yelling the whole time. Now, you can go on the web, you can see it's all over the place. And these cops, rather than escalate to the next level of force, they kept trying to rely on a use of force that was clearly ineffective. Which I'm saying is like, the definition of insanity.
Yes, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result.
Yeah. He's either immune to electricity, or he can't feel the pain or. His nervous system is simply a mutant. Maybe he's a mutant. I don't know. Maybe he's like the one of the X-Men or something.
Right.
Or Magneto.
Right.
I don't know.
Well,
but whatever
it
wasn't working. And these police officers didn't go to the next level.
Right.
These days, more and more police officers are not necessarily afraid of the suspects. They're afraid of the consequences if some Monday morning quarterback tries to second guess what they had to do on the scene when these things they say are supposed to work like magic bullets don't work like magic bullets, and then you got to use the real lead bullets.
Well, let me ask you a question. Who's more likely to shoot somebody in the back, a female police officer or a male police officer?
Well, I'll tell you something. I know some things are taboo. And I've known some women police officers that had all the guts. And one in particular I used to ride with, she had more guts than me. She was almost fearless. The problem was she didn't have enough ass, as it will, to prevail in a brawl with a big, strong man.
Right.
And that was the one thing I said, look, just let me take the lead on this. Because, you were getting injured. She was getting injured all the time. We had to take down some guy just out the joint, been pumping iron for the last 5 or 6 years.
Right.
In the joint, And she just didn't have what it takes. That was the biggest problem I saw with women. Over and over again. They could maybe do it if they had somebody around to help them out with the arrest. But when it came down to throwing down, man, it just wasn't there. And I talked to other officers, and they tend to agree with me.
Do you feel that a woman police officer, a male partner with a woman police officer, puts that male police officer more in danger or less in danger?
Well, of course, it depends on the woman. I'm not going to categorically say women can't handle jobs. Women can't handle women and do. But my biggest complaint is when you have to get into a and it was that's fairly common when people resist arrest. Even even I guess you could say a passive resistance where they just tense up. Then you got to use a pain compliance technique. Hopefully, they'll feel the pain and they'll comply with your commands to relax their arms so you can get the handcuffs on them. But when you're actively resisting, then you've got to go to strikes. You've got to hit them and stun them. And you've got to put some power behind the punch or the strike, wherever you're hitting, in order to get them stunned so you can get them incapacitated and get them in handcuffs. And that's why I found women almost invariably lack the ability to do, at least not with one, two, or three strikes.
I see. I
mean,
see.
I was a boxer, and I trained for this stuff. I mean, me and some of the partners I was on, three, four times a week, we trained in, like, we had our own improvised hand-to-hand fighting methods based on our experiences on the job. What happens? It's like fighting in a phone booth with these guys. You don't see a lot of dojo ballerina stuff. It's like you're in a fight with a phone in a phone booth. That's the kind of techniques you got to have to use to win. The kind of stuff you, if you imagine yourself fighting in a phone booth with somebody, that's the kind of stuff you got to have to prevail in most police hand-to-hand encounters. You need a lot of upper body strength, and you need the ability to strike hard and quickly at close range.
Now, Sarge, I got to ask, give me an honest answer because of all your law enforcement background. Like, when you come across people like Mr. Solution and Starbucks, are you more likely to shoot him in the head before he even stands up and try to explain why he didn't pay for the cup of coffee or that he abused that girl verbally? Isn't that the kind of guy that we want to shoot? What do you think,
Sarge? Well, I get the impression from Mr. Solution that he might be kind of a big guy, so I might be inclined to go for the gat and put him out.
Sarge, I'm going to object to responding to that jackass question.
I'll shoot him in the head.
Because what happened is here you have a jackass on steroids just with verbal diarrhea.
Well, we know, but isn't that what we love about Brian, man, that he does stuff like that from time to time?
Thank you.
That's what makes
him
love him.
You know, I told him just now, he'll never be a high thousandaire. I was listening to a report. It said 58% of Americans, even those in the high income bracket, are now living paycheck to paycheck. So his asking dumbass questions like that, I understand how he is at the top of that list.
That's right, baby. Oh, come on.
Oh, buddy, I'm telling you, it is, man, it is.
You have heard many blog talk people. I am one of the best. So stop your whimpering, you little baby. I would shoot you in the ass.
The thing about asking Brian, now I'm listening to Sarge sit here, and, you know, I'm also thinking about an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And what you aren't asking is, why are people resisting arrest? See, you first come off with this black bullshit. Now, I'm going to say this. Chris Rock, and I'm going to examine this with all you, quote-unquote, lying black racist. The question is, who's the most racist, black folks or white folks? Now, Chris Rock asked this question, and he says black folks because they hate each other, and this is certainly based on the per capita head count kill, how often they kill each other. Who's the most racist? And he says black folks because they hate themselves and they hate white folks. So, I mean,
now,
you
see, if you believe that, you're a moron. It's not about racism. It's about economics. See, you're supposed to be a smart guy.
Well, you can say that, dummy, but
it's about the economy, stupid.
Brian, I know, Brian. We got to have a little bit more nuance here with regard to this expressions of racism. Now, look, I don't actually know as a group if white people or black people are more racist, but this I know beyond any doubt whatsoever. When it comes to public expressions of racism, black people are almost unhesitant to immediately ascribe racist motives to other people and to make racist comments about other groups of people. White people, I would say, as a general rule, are more circumspect about their racism, even if they might be more racist. Now, I can guarantee you, when it comes to expressing it, black people got it hands down over almost every other major ethnic group in the country.
Now, wait a minute, Sarge. You're leaving, with your statistical background, you're leaving out, and I like being in conversation with you sometimes, and the thing I often appreciate about Sarge is that he can shift on a fly. And but see, what I said with my opening piece of evidence was the rate at which they kill each other. Now, you know as well as I do, they categorize that or calculate that on a per 100,000 head count. And you can't avoid that what I said is accurate. It's widely known.
If the black homicide rate was the same or nearly the same as the white homicide rate, the homicide rate in the United States would be lower than nine of the countries in Europe that they say the United States ought to emulate when it comes to reducing homicide. It's because the black homicide rate is so wildly disproportionate to the white homicide rate.
And the other homicide rate. So answer that question, Sarge. Because hate is used as the animal.
Wait a minute. No. When he's reporting statistics, and I do believe Sarge, he's good. But I'm saying there's also another factor. Not that we hate each other, because Mr. Solution is black and he doesn't like to be called black.
Hold on, Brian. Let me say that. That's a lie. And let me say this,
you're not a black man.
One of the problems
you're probably hung
people
like a Chinese person
ill.
Or a Jewish person with a being circumcised.
Brian, hold on a minute. One of the problems with people of your ilk, they spend trying to define someone else's reality rather than mining their own.
Anybody else's reality. I'm just saying, if you put any race in an economic, if you put Haitians, Jamaicans, you can go Haitians, Jamaicans, Jew, Irish.
You can't ignore the history
that when the Irish... You're ignoring... And Sarge knows what I'm talking about. Any kind of immigrants. Have you ever seen Scarface?
When
any immigrants coming over, you're going to have this economic crime going on in your city. And is that so
no,
much
that's
that the
bullshit,
Italians or Haitians?
Look, at it, look, white people didn't start this shit. The dark Africans were the ones that sold each other. And that's the lie that you guys don't deal with.
Economics is the primary determinant of the wildly disproportionate black homicide rate, then you would have to say that would be true of black people's homicide rate throughout the history of our experience in the United States. And if
true.
You look at it, even though it's always been higher, it was never this out of proportion like it is now. It was always higher. You always had the stabbings and the Saturday night brawls and fights and all that stuff. That was common. But it was nothing like this ever. This is a relatively recent phenomenon. I can safely say that no matter what the economic disparity is today, it was infinitely greater 100, 150 years ago. And we didn't see that.
And let me say this, Sarge.
There's other factors at work to explain this, Brian.
Your Americanism is much more defined than your so-called blackness. And what you tend to do is to major in the minor. No other group of melanated people
identify racially. They're always over 21. How dare you, sir?
Black people in the United States did not always have this condition like this.
You know what? You're right, Sarge. Something changed. You are absolutely correct.
The father's left the house. The best disciplinarian for a black child that ever was, a black father, especially a black male child, is largely absent from the black family today.
But
and we don't want to look at it
before. But you don't think a black woman could? You don't think a black woman could raise a black child without going into some kind of crime?
I want that young black man us getting that testosterone shoving through their veins. Not respectfully as a dedicated black father.
Let him think on that a minute, and you answer that question, Brian. No woman can raise a child as well as a man. That study has been settled years ago. That's the reason prior to about 50 years ago, the child went with the father. Fathers are much better socializers of children than mothers are.
So, Sarge, you know, going with Mr. Solutions,
Barry. I'd just like to say, I do believe that men definitely need male role models. I don't know what I would have been without a male role model in my life.
I would not have been.
However good I am, I wouldn't have even been close without the men as examples for me growing up. But I will say this, let's just keep it in remembrance. Most black men between the ages of 17 and 34 do not commit serious crimes. The problem is when you have a kid that's marginal and he doesn't have a black role model, he could go either way, which is a small percentage of young black men. The absence of a father is, I guess you could call it, the tipping point that tips him into a life of criminality and recidivism.
Well, I agree, because if it wasn't for Willie the Wino, I would not be the man I am today. He raised me. And a coyote.
Shit.
That explains a lot. Yeah, like Willie. But Sarge, Mr. Solution said something that was good for once. Out of 10 years since I've known him, he hit on something. And I want to know if you agree with this. You're right. When you take the black male out of the picture, and then you put up some things like arrest him for something to give him a felony so he can never get a job again. So you take him out of the factor of being a person in a household that can support and get a job. So then you incarcerate him. And that was the plan, wasn't it, Sarge? Wasn't that the plan?
I don't know if it was the plan or not, but the welfare thing of removing the black man from the household, if he was in a household,
she could not get the welfare. The man had to be out of the household.
What is what I'm offended by more so even than that? The very people who created this problem that's seemingly intractable, the very ones who set up all of the cultural, economic, and social factors that have given us these no father in the house homes. You know, now it's like 70% to 80% depending on the locale you're talking about. You know, the very people who did this once upon a time, 80% of black fathers live with their children, are now seemingly saying that black men are inconsequential to the rearing of their children. What greater insult can you make to a black man than to say that? You know, women can do it without the black men. It's not really that important. They got daddy government to help them, and the community can help to raise a child. The village can help raise a child. Looks like the black father isn't really, a black man ain't that important in rearing his children. This is insanity. And it's like that is one of the most
unspoken
racist comments, I think, or racist attitudes toward black men that has ever been made. Black men are essential to the rearing of their children. They're not optional.
I said earlier that, and I would like for you to respond to this. Hold on a minute, Brian. I know that you were in the police force. Now, the police use anything to try and identify someone. But people in the general society certainly don't have to view themselves the way the police force would. The police force is somewhat atavistic, and they operate somewhat on a primitive level. Now, we need them, sure enough, but they do. Now, my point is this. Every other group of people that are melanated identify themselves nationally. But here in America, that's turned on its head. It's bass ackwards.
you take, and I'll just use the name, so-called black Americans don't identify nationally. They just identify as black. Now, at a certain point, you say, well, what the fuck is that? Because that's not even clearly defined. And no resources come from blackness. There's no country called black. Now, there are melanated people around the world. But I'm going to say part of the problem is identifying with something that has no real definition. What do you think of that?
You are parsing the words. It started with Negro from Nigeria and
Niger.
So
Negro
turned into
Spanish
nigger.
Black.
Turned
stop
into
a minute, Brian,
Spanish,
and let Sarge answer the question.
Spain.
Let Sarge answer that question, Brian. Hold on a minute.
Just for you ordering the wrong coffee, I would shoot you in the head. I would be justified.
And Brian, hold your mouth shut just for a moment. Sarge, respond to what I just said about identifying so-called racially as opposed to nationally.
I agree with everything you just got through saying because, and again, what we've got to realize as to this, I don't know, this profound confusion about identity with regard to black people. And remember, in the 60s, the terms for black people were changing like women changed their shoes. You know, it was colored, Negro, colored, Afro-American, you know, every time you turn around, somebody's come, African-American, he's come up with a new term because we're just searching for this identity so badly. And the problem is twofold. Number one, the aspirational hopes of most black people to become part of the American mainstream was substituted by people who used identity in their quest for influence and power. And I'm talking about the Marxists who took over the civil rights movement to a large extent. That's why. They're always big believers in class warfare. And a way to separate people by class was to come up with arbitrary definitions, particularly about identity. And certainly not ones that would involve being part. Because look, black people, for the most part in the United States, are natural-born citizens of the United States. Their real identity is the fact that they're American citizens, and their identity
so
is that of America.
Are you saying black is not anything to identify with, Sarge?
Every other ethnic group identifies with a region when they talk about their ethnic identity.
So they don't identify with a color.
A Swede does not think of himself as a Sicilian, even though they're both Caucasians.
All right.
Now you could say part of that is due to the fact that black people were cut off from their ancestral heritage, and of course that is
right.
True. But to a degree, you can recover it, like I have, having taken 3 DNA tests. I now know who my racial ancestors were: the Caucasians and the Africans. So I can recover it to an extent.
I don't know because Solution did the same thing, and he's related to a baboon.
Okay, man. Look. But he's right when he says that. But he's right when he says that black people in the United States are the only ethnic group that identify around an amorphous definition of race, where everybody else identifies with a region and a locale. Whether you're Hispanic, you're a Honduran, you're a Venezuelan, you're a Brazilian. Even though I don't know if that's exactly Hispanic, but you get the picture. You're a Guatemalan, you're European, you're a German, you're a Swede, you're a Finn, you're Dutch.
Then what is
you're
American
Irish,
black?
You're Anglo. You know, you're a Saxon. You're a Norman. You're something.
Right.
But you're not just a Caucasian. Not just white and Euro-American. That's something that these black identity people have put on Europeans that they don't even use. They don't say I'm a European. I'm an Irish American.
Now, Sarge, I have to push back on this just a little bit. No, you explained that masterfully, as you usually do. But now my question is, why did I have to literally taser you to extract that from you?
Because you're a freak. You
had to ask me, and you did.
No. This is what I'm saying. See, you were going down that path. You kept using the term black. And I'm saying, I think you meant amorphous,
it's a shorthand, and I'm lazy, and I'll admit it, but I didn't want to have to go through a lot of extemporous explaining in order to get to my main point. But I see your point. I do it too. You're right, and I shouldn't.
Right. And that's why I'm saying, and see, Brian, more than anything else, needs to be educated. He is almost stripped.
I am edumacated.
He has been edumacated, whatever. He is
University of Hard Knocks, my friend.
Yeah.
I learned the street
he
words.
He has almost been stripped.
The street.
All of his,
shut up a minute, Brian.
He has been stripped of all of his
information. Brian, here's one thing I'm trying to emphasize to you. Even though now with my DNA test, I can see my Irish ancestors and my Germanic ancestors and my French ancestors, and I got 2% Finnish ancestors.
Every one of us, every one of us is
Togo,
is a mixture.
From Cameroon, from Benin, and from Ghana.
That's
they're all
true.
Part
right.
of
now, let me give you a better,
all
let me give you a better description.
In my DNA.
Therefore,
I say to you, my ethnicity, as far as I'm concerned, is America's. America is a mutt. And
exactly,
by me saying
exactly,
I'm a natural born citizen of
the
United States,
but
that ought to explain everything.
A mutt is a better animal, actually, better genetics, better understanding, better survival skills. But look here, this is the point. Now, Dr. Claude Anderson talks about this pretty extensively. Hold on a minute, Brian. Now, you asked for information. Shut up and listen a moment. The other thing is this. The better description. If an accessory description is necessary, would be melanated people or what you would call non-immigrant.
You know, you sound so ridiculous when you say melanated people. It sounds so ridiculous.
Hold on a minute, Brian. Shut up. You don't understand.
It's melanated, that is number one.
Number two is even a better description.
People have some kind of melan in them.
Hold on, Brian. Hold on a minute. You don't know shit. Would be non-immigrant American, that would be a better description than black.
I talk to shit. I go, shit, do you know Mr. Solution? He goes, I don't know him, so you don't know shit either.
The thing of it is, you know a lot about a person when you know their region of origin.
The American region has no history, has no country.
No, region has everything because every people identify with a landmass, not some bullshit amorphous color.
But you not identify with your DNA that you're a baboon.
Oh, there you go, being a jackass.
Wait a minute, I'll be right back.
100% jackass.
Let me get some coffee. I'll be right back, please. It's only gonna take 2 minutes. All right,
Brian was so rude in interrupting, even though we haven't heard from him in a while.
Great guy.
Dr. Anderson proposes, because he's done a lot of work in this area, he proposes the term, it seems to be a term other than American, which is the most important.
Brian, think of how clumsy it would be for me now
am
that
I
know my
air?
Genetic makeup. Think about it, for me to say that I am a Togoan, Cameroonian, Ghanaian, Nigerian, Congolese, German, Irish, Scot, Welsh, Finnish, American. How stupid is that?
Can you guys hear me at all?
That's all part of who I am.
Because if you can't hear me, I
got to
end the show. I don't think you guys can
hear
me.
No, I can hear you. You're just not
good.
Saying
well,
anything.
Yeah,
worth
I have to take a break
because I got a sponsor. Can you guys let me have my sponsor?
Do it.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. I'm Brian Hammer Jackson. If you know Mr. Solution, please report him to the local police department. You will know him because he's a black man who identifies himself as a baboon. Thank you.
Come on, Brian. Stop it.
I have an author, and her book is called.
And Brian, what are the problems with
you? I have a sponsor. I got to get my sponsor. You want me off the air? If I don't say my sponsor, I'm going to go off the air because I'm not going to pay for this. They're paying me for this.
Well, that baboon shit was bullshit.
I don't know. Why are you walking on all fours with your knuckles dragged to the floor?
All right, we'll be right back.
Get your ass. Dude,
I identify myself as a black man, and this is a person, my doctor.
Look, you've been on drugs so long, you don't know what the fuck
We'll be
you
right
are.
Back. We'll be right back. James Brown, that's right, say it loud, you're black and you're proud. I will be up there, I will represent the black race. I will hold my head up high.
You don't represent anything but a jackass.
Hey,
man.
That's Mr. Jackass,
you horses,
sir, have some respect.
All
you right,
are the
you
horse's
know,
patoot, Brian, no doubt about
how
it.
How dare you talk about my horse's patoot. Get your head out of my patoot, my horse's patoot. You're the one who's been molesting my horse since he was a pony. Shame on
Brian,
you.
Brian, see, the problem
Listen
with you, and I've spoken with a number of people
What's
such
the problem
as you,
with me?
That they did so
Only
many
one?
Drugs, they did so many drugs in their formative years that their comprehension becomes very difficult in their older years. That's
yeah,
one
really?
Of the consequences of doing
wow.
all those drugs.
Especially
well,
that 50% THC reefer you've been doing all your life.
That THC reefer. You got the THC reefer. It's a reefer of madness, I tell you. I'm telling you, it's a reefer of madness.
Man, I tell you, man, that weed today, man, ain't like the weed I was smoking when I was coming
right,
up, man. Like a 5% THC. This stuff is 50% THC, not to say
you're
the
right.
other stuff they lace it with. It's inducing psychosis in people like you.
He has that, there's no doubt about it.
Hey,
oh, and by the way,
listen, you right-wing Donald Trump.
Hold on, Brian. Hold on a minute. Shut up. If you
no,
read
you shut up. I'm the host
one,
of this show. Now, you sit down. You be quiet. I will tell you when
point,
to talk, and you will tell me,
people,
you will tell me, please.
If you call
hey, but
people
listen,
who
there, there's another thing before we go
black,
out there. Wait, there's another thing before we go
black,
out there. I got a serious thing. I want to ask Sarge. I want to ask Sarge
it was
before we go out there, because we're going out there soon. Hey,
at one time, calling them black were fighting words. So, I mean, you're flopping. That's no identity. The word negro is the Spanish word for black. So I mean, it's
listen,
identifying
the,
almost
the South
with
people
nothing.
From there's a lot of slave ships from Niger, and the people from
it's
the South did not pronounce Niger, and they went into nigger. Do we want to go? We want to go into the backward folks that could not pronounce Niger when they said when the slave
okay,
ships
hold on.
Were coming
no, no, no.
over,
this
and they started
is, this
saying
is
nigger.
My main
actually, they didn't
so
say
much
nigger. They
energy
said
is spent on
it's,
trying
it's
to identify with something that
niger.
Doesn't exist, that what does exist is completely overlooked, which is your American heritage.
Americans do not have heritage at all. There's no such thing. We are
now
a land of immigrants.
Absurd.
We come.
Now
we have come from. I don't think there is such a thing as American heritage. Tell me who's an American. I mean, everything that
well,
is American
the thing
has been
about
stolen,
it is, see, that's the
that's
problem
been stolen,
for your colossal
that's been
failure.
Hijacked,
you don't
that's
understand
a,
the major subject that's being dealt with.
What are you talking about, Mr. Solution?
That's my point.
Now you're being Mr. Pollution. There is no such thing
well,
as an
what
American.
What I'm saying is,
listen
when you
to me,
spend
there's
all
no
your
such
time
thing as an American heritage. There's no common
when
bond
you spend all your
that
time
relates
trying
to an American.
With something that doesn't exist or is inconsequential, you waste all your energy and time on nothing, and you don't get ahead. In other words, try to understand capitalism.
See, that's the problem
that's
with
the
you,
American
Mr. Solution. You haven't got ahead
know.
In a long time. You need to have some sex to figure out all those
problems.
You need to get ahead.
Cultural
I get
entity.
Ahead. You need to get ahead. Everybody, well, head, you know, it should be
is,
over head for everybody.
You have a PhD in obscurantis delecta.
Now you're talking. At least I have a PhD. You have just a BS.
Okay.
All right, listen.
Brian, look.
Yes,
I got a culture. I got the unique black American, and I'm using shorthand again, the unique black American culture that was developed here in the United States as a result of many factors. Part of it was my mother's Cajun black culture because she was a Louisianian, and my grandfather spoke French very well, but it was a unique a culture that she inherited from that from her side of the family. My father was born in Ohio. He was born in Cincinnati. He had that unique northern flavor of black culture, and it combined with me in the household I was raised in. Now, that's the culture I identify with, this distinctly black American culture that has many flavors depending upon where it's located. It's like anything else. See, what when you reduce everything to one big, you know, like you said, amorphous blob, it has no meaning and no distinctiveness. And since there's so many different ones, the common thread for me is the unique and blessed gift I was given to be born a citizen of the United States of America. That is my central identity. And it will always be. And no one's going to move me off that square.
Well,
exactly.
I understand how you
Hold on, Brian.
Sarge, we're getting into an area that is very sensitive, and I'll tell you what, because you just told me what you identify to. And that goes into the area of transgender, where they said that what they identify to. Now, you can have a boy saying that I identify as a female, and then we have this little thing called the transgender because they don't identify themselves as that sex that they were born to. So we have a lot of people saying this is what I identify to instead of saying that doing a census, if you have a third of African blood in you, you are considered a black African American. That's how we identify who you are, what rights do you have, or what grant you can get, or what scholarship do you have? Because if you have a third of American Indian in you, you're considered this. This is how we identify you. So if you identify yourself something differently, then you can't get mad at gay people. You can't get mad at transgender. You can't get mad at bisexuals because they don't identify with the norm. They identify with something else. Isn't that the dangerous thing, so Sarge? So if you identify yourself as so many different ethnic backgrounds and so many different cultures and not as one thing, I guarantee you, Sarge, I'm sure you're a handsome, good-looking guy, but you walk into Starbucks and you do a carry, white people are going to be looking at you and saying, is a guy going to rob the place, or if you drive and a cop's going to stop you unless you say you're a part of the police force, you're going to have that worried about how they identify you as a black man. So we have to be, we have to live in that skin about identifier in America, and this is what they identify us as being, a third of black blood or African-American blood or African blood in you.
Okay, I say flush it to all that dumb shit, but go ahead and answer, Sarge, and then I'll follow up.
Yeah, I'd love to answer this one because, I mean, first of all, I don't believe all concepts have equal validity, number one. So let's get that straight. When somebody says that a man says they're a woman and I'm expected to swallow that whole, I can say I identify as a Martian. It don't make it so. The fact that there are specific criteria for what makes you a citizen of the United States, and I meet every single one of them, so I am. There are specific criteria that meet the definition of a woman or a man. It is scientifically established. And I am not responsible for the misperceptions of others. That is on them.
Thank you.
Not on me. They're free to have those misperceptions if they insist upon holding to them, but I don't have to accept them, and I'm free to challenge them every time I'm presented with them. That's my simple, succinct answer to everything you just said.
Now let me respond to that in part. Okay, the thing he mentioned, and he conflated a bunch of things, which he doesn't understand how to interpret things accurately. Part of identifying as different ethnic groups was part of the reparation attempt of government. So it is perfectly okay if one needs those specific items or whatever is being offered to say, yes, I qualify for that, knowing at the same time that those definitions have a very narrow usefulness, very narrow. You don't have to go out in public waving a flag that because you identify for something that the government offered in terms of reparations, that now this is my identity. That's absurd, okay? That's ludicrous. You are an American that was utilizing some of the tools that were presented, tendered, in order to repair some damage that was done in the past. But, Brian, all that you gave is a very lowbrow, low-level, Neanderthal way of looking at reality.
Mr. Solution, you need to come into reality because I don't know that little bubble that you live in.
Let me say this.
It's a nice little bubble.
I've been stopped by the police.
I mean, I like
not recently.
I like to pop
but
I've been,
I have no trouble with the police at all. We wave at each other.
Well, you shouldn't have any. Well, you know, you should not have any
problems. Hold on a minute.
You should not have any problems with the police. Nobody should have any problems with the police. But reality is, it's all. And I'm really surprised you disagree with me, Sarge. I'm really surprised you disagree with me. I'm surprised that you disagree with me about economics. Because if you go into the ghetto or a poor section of town and everything, I'm really surprised that police are more on guard.
I would beat your ass. I would.
Now, why
would
you resolve the violence?
I would taser you,
now, why would you resolve the violence?
Club you.
Look at you. I would report you. I would take your paycheck and your pension, and then I would fuck your wife in front of you.
Oh, okay, but I would
Brian,
beat your ass.
Brian,
make no mistake.
Brian.
I'm kidding.
Look,
I'm kidding.
Brian, again,
yes,
economics
yes,
does explain a higher level of criminality. I'm not disagreeing with you on that. It does not explain what we're looking at today. The wildly disproportionate rate of it, even as the economic situation of black people has wildly improved in the last 100 years. That's the point we're trying to make
for you.
You're right.
I do
agree
with you.
You keep describing it. For you, that's the primary determinant, economics.
Right.
He's carrying baggage that he doesn't have.
Mr. Solution. Listen,
you don't even know what a woman is.
And what does that have to do with anything, Mr. Solution? You don't even know what a woman is unless she's plastic and you have to blow her up. What does that mean that I have a Caucasian woman? No. What does that mean that I have a Caucasian woman? Mr. Solution, the only pussy that you've got is the one on four legs
to
drink milk out of a saucer, and even then the pussy ran away.
I'm going to
stop it and behave
your
yourself.
Question, if you allow
behave
me.
Yourself, Mr. Solution, and come out of the closet. Now, Sarge,
I'm going to ask you a direct question.
You don't have to ask him a direct question.
I'm
Will you behave yourself?
Sarge, well, I'm saying that for your dumb ass, okay? Just
no,
listen.
Yeah,
I'm
like direct questions.
You.
That's the ones I prefer.
I'm
you
going
okay,
to
go
ask
ahead.
You
the
a
Sarge
direct
prefers
question.
The direct question.
Sarge.
The direct question is,
now, Sarge and
if I shot Mr. Solution, would I get away with it because he needs to be shot
just
in the head?
Just listen a moment. Listen. All right. Sarge, direct question. That other station that you and I appear on quasi-regularly, you more than
right.
I,
right.
given
whatever.
The fact that Brian
yeah.
doesn't live in
yeah.
a black neighborhood, he speaks
you don't know where I live.
Somewhat coherently, and he's with a
Caucasian
woman.
Are you saying black people
woman.
Don't speak coherently? What are you talking about?
Well, you have a
listen, Brian.
You ever heard of Kamala Harris?
Are you saying because I don't live in a black neighborhood? And that I speak coherently, meaning that I'm out of the picture of a black family?
You speak partially coherently, and you keep interrupting.
What you don't understand is because of lack of your own education, and you're a baboon.
No, I'm going to prove you wrong. I'm going to prove that you are wrong. You still drive up to Starbucks in a yellow bus. Behave yourself. Do any of those people over there who identify themselves as true black, would they identify him as black?
Yes. And I have the penis to prove it.
So, no, they probably wouldn't. They probably say he was inauthentically black.
What?
Okay,
Sarge.
There you go.
Sarge, what are you doing? Don't pander to this
guy. No, I'm saying, Brian, look, you don't have enough wokeness in you to be considered authentically black.
What? I am authentic.
No,
I put on my tablet that says here, property of nigga. I am an authentic black.
You cannot be considered authentically black if you have any vestige of conservative principles.
I have no conservative principle at all.
That's bullshit. I hear you all the time, the way you talk about homosexuality.
Black people can't be conservative. I listen to you, Brian. Hey, you quit pulling me out of the closet, you.
I'm so surprised you ain't woken up to the conclusion I originally raised
regarding the term. And Brian, I live in a ghetto.
You don't know where I live.
About.
I live in South Central LA in a box. Right next to Adam's rib shack.
And by the way, I think Brian is talking out of his anus because he knows this. I don't think I'm telling him. You went to university, Brian.
As a sharecropper.
Let me ask you, Sarge, I had to pick cotton just to go to a university. I was picking cotton.
Got it. And you still wear those same rags. Look here. This is the point. Hold on, sir. Is it he, she, it doesn't, or he, she, it don't?
Pick one or the other. What the hell are you talking about?
This determines your blackness. Is it he, she, it doesn't, or he, she, it don't?
Now, you're going to give me an ebonic test. You got to give me something better than that. Come on. What's wrong with that one? If you're going to give me
a
phonic test, you got to give me something better than that. That's so lame. You
answer
know it is.
Sarge, was that an ebonic test, yes or no?
Predicate,
verb, agreement, and all of that. And that has been consistent for hundreds of years.
Sarge, was that an ebonic test, yes or no? You know what? Stop it. Behave yourself.
Are you going to the store or are you getting to go to the store?
Sarge, don't you do this.
That's ebonic, baby. That has got nothing to do with Sarge. It is a method of sentence construction. Did you hit the floor?
Rebelling against English by speaking it incorrectly is considered part of being black.
Both of you guys should be ashamed of yourself.
Hey, both of you,
I'm going to take your black card away, and you're not going to be able to come in this class and go
ask
dancing
him
anymore.
Again?
Can I ask you a question? Will you answer me the question I'm asking you?
Are you asking me or a solution?
A basic understanding of ebonics is essential to authentic black people as to whether or not
you have to use
black,
an undifferentiated third person. Never use T-H-E-I-R. Everything is they. Every time that term is necessitated, you use they. They everything. Never there. Never T-H-E-I-R. a differentiated third person.
It's their fault. You damn right. It's their fault.
Right. And that inducts you into the national blackness hall of bullshit.
I have never heard. This is such bullshit. You guys, stop it. Hey, but basically, I got 7 minutes. I got 7 minutes.
I want to talk about something. 7 minutes
that you can agree. You're talking silliness. I got to tell you something very important. It's 7 minutes. Keep you on course here. Let's talk about it. Donald Trump, let's talk about it really quickly. I got 6 minutes left. Donald Trump admitted that he's going to run for president because he's going to try to get rid of some of this indictment that's on his ass and some of these criminality allegations. Only in America that somebody can run for president because he's trying to escape the big house and trying to get into the White House. Here's my opinion. The best president, they said today, if Donald Trump ran against Biden today, Trump will lose by 10 points. I'm asking you. Do you think it's smart for the Republican Party to run Trump in 24? I'm asking you, Solution, and I'm asking you, Sarge. Was it a smart thing for the GOP to run Trump in 24?
My answer will be similar to Sarge's on this issue.
Well, go ahead. Okay. Let me hear it. It's a smart move.
Obviously, the choice for the nominee of President of the United States for the Republican Party will have to be determined by Republican voters. And if you ask me, given the grievance that the core of the Republican Party has for the outcome of the last election, the fact that it was not examined in any meaningful way in any Article III court in the land, I think will be a tremendous spur to getting out the vote for Donald Trump this time around. Now, I don't even know if he's going to be the nominee this time around despite that. I think he has to earn his slot like any other candidate. But if he makes a good case for why he should be the nominee of the party, it's his to win. And is it smart for them to run it? Yeah, I don't see why not. If Biden is a candidate, I don't believe that's stinking poll. I think it's a lie.
But Biden, Biden will not. We all know that Biden.
The methodology
but
of
forget
the poll.
Biden. Forget Biden for 1 minute. He would lose against Biden.
I haven't even looked at how the poll arrived at its conclusion.
Okay.
But I believe it's bullshit. I don't believe it.
All right, because I do want to ask you, I only got 5 minutes, and I do want to ask you another question, Sarge, but I got to ask Mr. Solution this question. Mr. Solution, please keep this under 30 seconds so we can ask the second follow-up question. All right? Mr. Solution, if Donald Trump does run for 24, should he be primaried? You only got 15 seconds left, Mr. Solution. Hello?
Maybe dropped off. Look, candidate should be primary. There shouldn't be a coronation
candidate,
and that includes Donald Trump. So every candidate should be primary. It makes you stronger. It's like when you get a good sparring partner and you're in the ring, it makes you a better boxer. So
Donald Trump had been president now, we would be in a much better place.
That's just kind of a silly, stupid thing.
Donald Trump should be primary, we would be in a much better place as a man who's trying to do a coup.
Exit question really quickly. 30 seconds to answer. Listen, Mr. Solution, I'm looking at the time. I got 4 minutes and I'm trying to get a question in. So you got 30 seconds to answer. Here we go. Exit question. Mr. Solution, do you think the committee that they're doing right now, the committee about January 6th, is effective? That's getting independent people saying, looking at this and calling and thinking Donald Trump's a criminal. Do you think it's effective what they're doing?
I think it's a waste of time, and it's only to try and get Donald Trump not to run. That's my opinion. And I think also that Donald Trump, we would be oil independent if Donald Trump were president, and we wouldn't be experiencing these high gasoline prices.
That goes to you, Sarge. Sarge, What do you think right now in California? I got to ask you a
total
question.
Sham and a complete kangaroo court, utterly devoid of meaningful cross-examination. It is acting as a grand jury, and it doesn't have the decency to keep its proceedings secret. It is utterly invalid, and the only people who are fooled by these things are those with no analytical or skills or knowledge of the law or politics. Those are the only people who are convinced by this.
Well, guys, I want to thank you for coming on. I love you guys.
Well,
wait
a minute. Before
you
go, Mr. Inconsistency, when are you bringing your sorry carcass back?
Mr. Inconsistency. What is? I don't even know what today is. Today's Thursday, isn't it?
Well,
I'll be on Friday.
You go into
I will be
detox,
on Friday. I will be on tomorrow at the
you.
Same time. I will be.
But get
what,
your ass
pray
into
for
detox.
When
no,
are
you,
you
guys
back
like
on?
Me like this. Well, you want to
wait,
fix
when
me?
Are you
going to
be
you
back on?
You want to
on?
Change the show? Yes, Mr.
Well, when are you
going
to be back on?
Tomorrow morning, same time, 7 a.m.
I'm sorry,
Saturday
just a
time.
Pleasure hearing from you, and you have a wonderful day. You too, loser, Brian.
Well, thank
ditto,
you.
Ditto.
Stay away. You know what, Sarge? I'm giving you a restraining order. You're not supposed to be around, Mr. Solution, at any possible
Brian, where are you going? I mean, why are you leaving? You're in the company of the best people you could be in the company of, someone who's going to hold your sorry carcass accountable. What are you going to do in the next half an hour, Brian?
I got things to do, people to see, appearances to make, scripts to write, business to do.
All right, lie to me. Have a good day. Hey, a pleasure speaking with you, sorry.
You
I'll catch you
see
later.
See you guys tomorrow morning.
Yeah,
see
yeah.
I'm going
to give you a homework assignment too, Brian. You need it.
Okay. What is the homework assignment?
It's basically American civics. You must have gone to college. You don't have a good enough education in it.
I went to UCLA, sir. I am
that
a Bruin.
You definitely need a
homework assignment. Sarge! Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening. We got the great Sarge here. It's always a pleasure and entertaining to hear
Sarge.
Hey,
you didn't say
here.
All your time was spent on some training field. You weren't in class.
Hey, quit telling my secrets, you whistleblower. And, again, thank you for
he's
Mr.
Solution right.
You
for should
coming
take a
air.
Civics course. There's no doubt about that. And an American history.
Get out of here. You guys, I can't believe it. You're outing me, you whistleblower. I will see you guys tomorrow. This is Brian Hammer Jackson. I will see you guys tomorrow at the same time, 7 a.m. Pacific Standard
Brian,
Time.
Have a good
hope
day.
To see you
bye-bye.
There. All right, guys. Be safe out there. Be safe. Bye.
Can't touch this. Can't touch this. Can't touch this. Can't touch this. My music hits me so hard, makes me say, oh my Lord, thank you for blessing me. What am I to rhyme and to hype me? It feels good when you know you're down. A super dope homeboy from the Oak Town, and I'm known as such. Can't touch this. Yeah, that's how we living, and you know, can't touch this. Look at my eyes, man. Can't touch this. Yo, let me bust a funky lyric. Touch this. Fresh new kicks and bands. You got it like that. Now you know you wanna dance. So move out of your seat and get a fire girl and catch this beat while it's rolling. Hold on, pump a little bit and let them know what's going on. Like that, like that. Pull a little bit, just fall on back. Let them know that you're too much, and this is a beat they can't touch. Touch this. Why you standing there, man? You can't touch this. Yo, sound the bell. School is in, sucker. You can't touch this. Give me a song, a rhythm, making them sweat. That's what I'm giving them now. They know. You're talking about the hammer. You're talking about a show that's hot and tight. Fingers are sweating, so fast them a white or a tape. To learn what's it gonna take in the 90s to burn the chart. Legit. Either work hard or you might as well quit. That word, because you know. You can't touch this. Can't touch this. Break it down.
Can't touch this. Ring the bell, school's back in. Break it down.